I'm going to call the City of Franklin's Committee of the Whole to order. Madam Clerk, please take the roll.
Mayor Taylor.
Here.
Alderman Olson.
Here.
Alderman Solomon.
Here.
Alderman Wilhelm.
Here.
Alderman Taylor.
Here.
Alderman Schmidt.
Present.
Alderman Skronsky.
Here.
Please rise. Join with me in the pledge of allegiance. I'm taking my time.
Yes, please.
I pledge allegiance
to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
I understand that there is at least one person that had requested to speak. I don't know when we get to I think it's on item A. When we get to that item, we'll have to see if the Common Council is willing to entertain suspending regular order business to allow people to speak. Usually it's tomorrow night is the citizens' comment period, but we'll leave it up to the council. Item A is a concept review for Mayor's Store, grocery and department store, general location, intersection of West Loomis Road and West St. Martin's Road. Mr. Deedle, do we have a presenter?
Yes, I'll start off real quick. We do have that the applicants are here and are prepared to give their presentation.
Okay. And let me, for the people in the audience, what a concept review is to get when a developer comes in, they want to just find out if they're going in the right direction, and to get kind of either a thumbs up or a thumbs down from the Common Council members as to whether there's really an interest in the developer pursuing these matters or should they go someplace else. On this particular issue, there's a couple issues that need to be addressed right off the bat. One of them will be the ordinance that concerns the restriction to 125,000 square feet that was passed some years ago. Just on that, if the council is not of the mind to lift or to modify the ordinance for this provision, the developer probably will be looking elsewhere. This is a 192,000 square foot retail center. For that corner. I guess maybe also to save some time, and that's that there were extensive discussions with the developer on the pursuit of other locations in the city. One of those was suggested maybe looking at the Century Store over on 76th Street. And I don't remember all of the sites, but there were quite a few. And my recollection of the meeting was that they had done it their research, and that this was the site that they were really concentrating their efforts on. It's also my understanding that they had a meeting with another municipality that morning, so there were other meetings. This would be the first Mayor's Store, I believe, in Wisconsin. So with that, I'll turn it over to Mr. Deal.
And I'll keep this short, as the applicant is prepared to give a presentation. This is the northeast corner of Loomis and Highway 100. They have assembled approximately 9 properties, about 90 acres. This is the site of a previous proposal, the Shops of Legend Creek. That project did not proceed. The property has sat vacant for a number of years then. At this time, they are proposing to combine those properties and build the Meijer store. It's a part grocery store, part department store. And it would be 192,000 square feet in size. They have a very preliminary site plan that they'll present. A number of approvals would be needed. The mayor's touched on the most important one, which is the UDO text amendment to revise or remove the ordinance for the retail cap. They'd also be required to obtain a number of other approvals from the council, including comprehensive master plan amendment, primarily to address change in future land use, but also to address consistency with the Crossroads trade area plan. They would also most likely need a rezoning. Part of this property is already part of PD 31, which is the Forest Hill Highlands senior housing project. They may also require site plan or special use, a certified survey map, and a natural resource special exception. So there are a number of approvals. They could all be processed concurrently, but they would all be needed to accomplish this project as proposed. A couple other things I'd like to note very briefly. There would be some changes to Putes Road as it intersects Highway 100, and they show that on their site plan. They would also be looking at traffic impact analysis, which I believe they are undertaking as we speak. They would be required to do a market study, and I believe also a right-of-way vacation for potentially changing that access between Putes and Highway 100. So I guess that's a real brief summary, and I would turn it over to the applicants to give some more information. And they are looking for some direction and guidance from the council.
Okay. Any of you to make introductions, Mr. Deal?
We have here, I believe, two representatives. One is Brian Kendall, and the other is Ernst, but you can even take my name part if you want.
Maybe while they're getting prepared, just for the information of the people in the audience, this was the we'll call it the famous site of the Walmart that wanted to gain access to the city. There was also the Shops of Legend Creek was a retail development that was very similar to the shops at Wyndham Village. The plan, both the Plan Commission recommended approval of that plan and the Common Council for whatever matters the developer determined not to move forward with it. So we have a number of projects like that in the city. Coming to mind that we have a Hampton Hilton Inn that was approved by both the Plan Commission and Common Council. Whether that moves forward is going to be up to the developer. Fountains of Franklin also, I believe, came in twice, was recommended for approval twice by the Plan Commission and the Common Council because there are revisions to it. So I put all that out there so that people understand that this is a concept review and many things can happen. With that, please proceed.
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, members of the Common Council, my name is Brian Randall. I'm an attorney with Freebird Finnerty and St. John here in Milwaukee. And my first item is a rather informal one. Walking out of the office tonight, John Finnerty saw me in the hall and he made sure that I said hello to each one of you. It's been a couple of years since our firm's been here on an exciting project, but we're very happy to be here on what we believe is a very exciting and project of the future for Franklin. And so it's something that our firm is very honored to appear in front of you and to bring forth something that we think will be part of a long process, but something that both the city, the neighbors, the citizens of Franklin, and Meyer itself can all benefit from as we go through this process. And as the mayor has been introducing our applicant, our company name, Meyer, it's going to take, I think, from our standpoint, a PR aspect, an effort to make sure everyone knows how to pronounce that Dutch name, but it is pronounced Meyer, and it's a family-owned company, and the family takes great pride in the business they've built since 1934. So we'll work on that and make sure everyone knows the Meyer name by the end of this process. With me this evening is David Behrens of Greenberg Farrow & Associates. David's right here, and he's the one primarily responsible for the land use planning, putting together the plans. Also, Emily Bernal is in the audience, and she may be able to point to some things as we refer to them throughout the plan. Greenberg Farrow is, in my estimation, a first-rate planning firm. They've done great legwork for us in making sure we understand all the steps that will be required to bring this forward, working with the staff and starting down the road toward presenting a very challenging plan, but one that is challenging by that I mean because of the site constraints that we have and because of certainly some of the procedural history that the mayor and Joel did touch upon that we know we are going to have to go through. But we have Greenberg Farrow as a great firm to help us through all that and to present these plans and to then quickly modify, change, or provide the explanation for why something looks like the way it does as we go throughout this process. The one person who's not here, and I do have to make an apology for that, is anyone from Meijer Stores. Meijer had an end-of-month major meeting in Grand Rapids, Michigan. That's where they are based. And our joint direct contact, his name is Michael Flickinger. Michael could not be here. He's probably in the car right now driving from Grand Rapids to his office in Chicago. But we made a decision on our team that it was important to come to Franklin with what we believe is a very exciting project at the concept review stage, even in Mike's absence, to start this conversation and to go forward. I know Michael has been here and met with certain city officials and leaders. I know Alderman Olson has met with him. And Michael certainly is going to take a direct-handed approach in working with us as we go through this process to explain the Meyer story, to the point where he even came in Friday night. We had the opportunity to meet with a couple of the neighbors, and I saw Tiffany Dravahinsky, I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. Tiff and her husband, Mike, met with Michael Flickinger and me on Friday night. They were kind enough to have us into their home, and that was certainly indicative of Mike's approach to come in, make sure the neighbors, the first one who called us back, had some of the answers they wanted to initiate that conversation. So we certainly expect the immediate neighbors who are affected, we're going to have some one-on-one opportunities or group discussions, as well as the neighborhood meeting that we hope that Alderman Olson will help us to put that together. So we apologize that Meyer could not be here, but Dave knows them quite well, has worked with them for a number of years. I have been on board for a number of months now as Meyer has carefully and strategically planned an entrance to the Wisconsin market, and they're very excited to make Franklin the first stop in that process. Before I overlook the fact that our process has involved the staff, they have been very helpful. And as I look in the room, I've called the city clerk's office to obtain some information and records and documents. Jesse Weslowski's been very helpful. Joel and his staff have been very helpful to us as we've gone through. And so you should know that you do have a first-rate staff, and they're doing the great job ahead of you before the policy issues come to you and framing those issues. And admittedly, we have a number of challenges, as the mayor and Joel outlined tonight. This site is not ready for development. This site has a number of issues, whether it's a permitted use under the zoning code, including the wetlands and other issues, or a new proposal, one that may not fit squarely in the existing zoning, and perhaps on a couple of issues, the zoning classifications and the restrictions that are attendant to all of those codes. I know in your packet there was a brief statement of history about the Meyer stores, and I wanted to just cover a couple of the high points, both for your benefit as far as the things that Meyer believes is most important, but also for the benefit of the audience members who may not have seen that on the website. I know the packet was online and available, but not everyone on kind of short notice can look into those things. Meyer stores were started in 1934 by the Meyer family and continue to this day to be a family-owned company. They are in five states, which are Michigan, of course, where they started, Kentucky, Ohio, Indiana, and Illinois, and we hope by 2014 to be open in the state of Wisconsin. Meyer Stores, while being a small Grand Rapids company and family-owned business, actually is credited with a lot of innovations in the retail world, including a lot of newspaper advertising as far as mass marketing and embracing that in some of the early stages, the first conveyor belt for the checkout scanners, as well as metal shopping carts versus baskets or other things that stores had. And durability-wise, those have been very helpful to the retail industry. Meyer was at the leading forefront of a lot of that and, in fact, was part of bringing all those into the mainstream retail world. Most importantly, Meyer developed and created the first, what many call, super center. And some people think that's a bad term. Meyer embraces what a super center is. It gives its customers a one-stop shopping opportunity, whether that's for the fresh produce they need from the grocery store side of things, to the windshield wipers in the auto parts aisle, to, and I saw this in Grand Rapids, the goldfish that are in the pet store aisle. So Meyer has a one-stop shop for pretty much every department that might be needed out there. Today, Hank and Doug Meyer continue to serve as co-chairmen of the family-owned company that is the third generation in leadership at Meyer. Thank you. What is up on the screen now, or what will be shortly, is an elevation. And again, Dave can talk about the design and materials and things of that nature, and we'll get to that in just a moment. I just want to cover a few more items. Meyer, while it is a super center, a super store, It is not laid out the typical way that some of you may be familiar with, and at risk of naming a few competitors, it's almost by necessity. Many people are familiar with what they know, a large-scale Target or a Walmart. Most of those stores are actually 60% on the merchandise, the soft goods side, and 40% on the grocery side. Meijer stores are actually flipped. In general, Meijer stores are about 60% grocery and 40% general merchandise. And the reason for that is because Meijer started as a grocer, and it grew up as a grocery store, and that's what Meijer does best and what it always has done. And then in the 60s, when they added on the Supercenter, the larger format, that's when they added these other product lines. But at core level, Meijer is a grocery store, and it's very proud of that. The perishable foods, the fresh meats, the seafood, all of that is first rate at a Meijer store, and it shows in both what the customers can buy and the value that they provide. Other highlights are Meijer's dedication to charity, and they primarily focus at the local level. This store would be, just like all the others, focused with food banks and charitable causes with helping those who may be in need. Meijer also, and we gave a long bullet point list, has a general commitment to sustainability and its approach for its stores, both in development and design, and the site itself are welcoming of and embrace some of those sustainable features. I think before I touch on a couple of the broad brush categories as far as the challenges we have with the site as identified by staff, Mayor Taylor, the zoning, the big box ordinance, I'd like Dave to talk about the store a little bit and the design that we have, whether it's the site plan or the elevations.
Okay. Jack, could you get maybe one of the lights to so that people in the audience can see that? See it a little bit better. There you go. That's a lot better.
So with that, I'll turn it over to Dave Behrens.
Excuse me, Mr. Mayor.
Yeah.
I have maybe 10 extra sets. Someone in the audience would like that.
Oh, sure. That would be a great idea. Thank you.
Sure, not a problem.
And pass them out. Okay.
Well, just to interrupt, Dave, while Alderman Olson's passing those out, we can certainly provide copies if anyone would like one after the meeting. They can either give me their address or their email, and we'll maybe Emily, I'll give you a little pad and just give us your address, and we'd be happy to share those with you. And then as we may develop them, we can update them that way.
I was trying to get Mr. Deedle's attention when you were speaking, so my apologies, but did you cover what the estimated value of the store is and the taxable revenues?
I did not cover that, but I'll ask Dave if you know those numbers. I know that jobs-wise it's 200 to 250 jobs, but the investment in the store and the estimated taxes,
I don't know that initially.
But we'd be happy to get that information or estimate it at this point, and I don't know if Joel has an estimate based on developments of this scale. But
given that this would be built in the Franklin School District and the number one goal of the city is to try and achieve the 70-30 goal, that would be one of the primary factors that I'd want to hear. I thought we had made mention of that at the meetings that we had.
Great. Good evening. My name is David Behrens. I'm with Greenberg Farrell Architecture. We are a national company. We're very pleased to be here this evening to present this Meijer store. Meijer is one of those unique clients that you do not get to see every day. Specifically, being a privately owned, they don't report to Wall Street. They're very concerned about the quality of their product and the brand themselves, and they take the time required to review the sites that they look at along with the project that they put forward. We're here this evening basically to talk about this project at Loomis and St. Martin's Road. Which, as was described, is about 29 acres in size. It's got some limitations to it as to how you develop, and it's really why it's probably taken us in the range of about 3 months to really investigate the site and become comfortable coming forward and having an initial presentation to yourselves as to what we believe could possibly be developed within this location. Just from a history standpoint or a due diligence standpoint, we've reviewed the site. We sent out a geotechnical team to review the soils and the materials involved as far as construction there. We've surveyed it. We've done environmental reports to make sure that we understand some of the existing conditions that are out there, some of the uses that might have occupied the site previously. and whether or not there's any type of cleanup associated with it, which honestly there is just a little bit on this location. In addition, we've engaged environmental consultants to look at, you've got an environmental corridor on the east side of this project that contains both floodplain, some wetlands, and a little bit of habitat at the same time. So we've begun that initial study, and that has all impacted how we've designed and placed this building. And then finally, we've met with the Department of Transportation to truly understand some of the parameters for developing that, this project in itself. From those conversations, there has been the discussion of the realignment of Bates Road and how we circulate and service the project through that. Right now, presently, we do show three access points on the project, one on Putes Road, which was a full access point, or actually a three-quarter access point, right in, right out on St. Martin's Drive, and then a full access point on West Loomis. I want to be clear that those are discussions that are preliminary. We are in the providing a traffic analysis design for this, working with traffic analysis design with this project to prepare a traffic impact analysis and determine how best should traffic circulate around this project and access the property and so forth. So by no means is this a final representation of what will be built there as much as it is a snapshot in time. But generally, the building itself, I would say, has rotated in a number of different directions on the site to where you see it today, almost at a 45-degree angle to West Lomas and St. Martin's Drive. It is about 192,000 square feet with the garden center side of it placed on the West Pewes Road side of the project and the loading dock placed on the opposite end along St. Lomas. The parking is just north of about 700 cars associated with it, and we continue to play with that a little bit from the standpoint that we know there's landscape requirements and a higher aesthetic value that the community would like to see for this project. To the point where we've started to show some amenities, we haven't defined them at this point. It's something that we do want to work with the citizens and the council and the staff specifically to figure out how best do we fit into the community. Some of those elements are right along Loomis Road where we've got our access point. We show the need for a detention basin within there, how that basin's shaped, whether it's dry basin, wet basin, is yet to be determined. At the very hard corner, we've suggested in your plan set that we place a site amenity. It's really an opportunity to highlight the community, highlight this project. We specifically haven't placed anything there yet. We've seen some other projects within the community and different effects, and what's been presented to us is that you want a high-quality project, and we're looking for ways to do that without us making the complete suggestion. We want to work with staff to figure that out. And then, of course, there's needs for landscape buffers in various areas also. So we continue to get comments from staff. We've heard some comments initial from the citizens, but we're really here to listen to anything that may be presented this evening as to how to go forward with the site plan itself. Go ahead.
Alderman Olson in the packet, I don't know if you have this, but he put together a list of comments, and I thought they were very well thought out. And I'm just wondering if you've had time to go through that. Maybe what I should do is just turn it over to Alderman Olson and let him go through the comments that you have in the packet.
Well, thank you, Mr.
Mayor. Especially given the Alderman from the district.
Sure.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. And it also comes from going through a couple other battles. So I think the community has a strong sense of what it wants. Unfortunately, just to be really blunt, this isn't what the community drew up 2004. Reality is something different in a different economy and that kind of thing. So, so given the past history, my list was actually not all inclusive, but it was the issues that the immediate neighbors brought to me and the issues that I've known of for many years. The Pewes Road entrance has got to go. That's a deal breaker, bottom line. You can't empty a department store traffic into people's front yards. You just can't do it. that's a deal breaker, the bottom line. You're working on it. We want to shift the building as far north as possible, given the wetland constraints and all that. We understand that, but there are neighbors that are immediately south of the building and really close, so we want to be cautious about that. And as well, we need to screen those property owners. Garden Center, there's a plus because it's not a hard wall, but still, these folks are going to look at that building 365 days a year. We need to do some effective screening. You show it in this drawing. It wasn't going to be for this one. By the way, I do appreciate, for those in the audience, we have met once before. The initial plan showed a gas station on the site as well. That's gone, and I appreciate that, and I thank you for that. This is going to be a big issue, but Crossroads Trade Area Plan specifies no 24-hour operations. The neighbors don't want a 24-hour operation either. So strong consideration to the Meyer family on how they respond to that. That's a big issue. Truck docks are where they belong. I appreciate that. There is a rather large stormwater management issue in this particular area. And although you're upstream, we have to be very mindful of what happens downstream of you. No, farther upstream of you, you are downstream. So you need to be careful with that. As for the building design, I was not excited about it. It's a box. Let's face it, it's a box. As an architect, I would appreciate you doing something to make this, your presentation, give the city of Franklin more a sense of place, not this is, as I said in my email, Plan A. I don't know that the city has ever accepted Plan A from the developer, and the goal here is not to be difficult or hard to work with. The goal is to provide the community with a sense of its own. Not, oh, that store looks like the one that's in West Dallas, that store looks like the one that's in Grafton. We want a unique architecture treat. Frankly, after a lot of hard work, Target did a fair job on theirs. Go take a look at what they did, what met some minimum accepted standards for us. Especially the long lines in the building, especially the rear of the building, is not good. You've got to find a way to break that up. And I understand all the operational issues inside the store, but whatever you can do outside of that really would help smooth the way for an approval. There will be a seniors development behind the building, and I urge you to work with the owners of the Forest Hill Highlands. Brian, I know that you've talked to them already, and continue to work with them for pedestrian access to the development. And that was my initial comments for the moment.
I guess this is Dutkin. It's new to you, but I would agree with Alderman Olson. First of all, thank you for you taking the gas station off of the corner. I think I said that I would not support something like that. I think what's also important is I did my due diligence, and I went and I researched the family, and it's very much like Gordon Foods, and it is a great family business. And one of the owners came out here, I think, on one or two occasions already. So love to see this your business come to Franklin. I do want to get something I raised earlier, and that's that I think I was pressing you in some of the meetings for the owner. About looking at other locations in the city. One was, we have Century on 76th and Rawson. I think there are a couple other sites in the city that I suggested maybe you take a look at. The Century site, the Century site would have been, I guess, my suggestion, my recommendations. Given that that store has been vacant for some time. I know that many Century stores are, but it's also kind of the heart of the city. And in the past, there were some discussions about that being the site for Target. I know that the previous discussions in the city that the people in the area
really were pushing for high standards, really wanted to have something more with boutique shops. Shops of Legend Creek, in fact, I think the people, had maybe 100 people involved in the meetings over at the Law Enforcement Center, just looking at all the middles, and where they, maybe more than that, I don't know. But after considerable discussion and things like that, I think the people in the area were okay with the Shops of Legend Creek. I don't know if Alderman Deal, Mr. Deedle mentioned it or not, but this land is currently zoned for, well, if, I'll put it this way, if a bar came in tomorrow, an owner wanted to reopen the old Illusions motorcycle place that's on the corner there, I believe that we would be fairly hard-pressed to deny that individual. Council probably could vote against it, but I'm thinking circuit court judge probably would reverse it. So that site is very much an eyesore, and it has been, and I get more comments probably on that site than any other site in Franklin. So I wanted to, I'm sort of talking to you, but I'm also talking to the people in the audience. It's one of those, yes, we'd love to have the Shops of Legend Creek. However, if the land is not rezoned, the current facility that's there could either be remodeled or opened. And I know when I was chairman of the licensing committee, there was nothing but a terrible problem with motorcycle gangs and everything like that. So I guess the other thing is that the developers, the Shops of Legend Creek, they ran into a lot of wetland issues. And just looking at your drawings, looks like you're backing right up on top of a wetland. I don't know if you're encroaching on that or if that's is what you have on there. Is that permissible under the law? Maybe we should ask Mr. Diesel.
They would need to... Sorry. They would need to successfully obtain a natural resource special exception from the city. They are impacting wetlands and buffers. They would have to obtain a natural resource special exception from the city, as well as permission from the DNR and possibly even the Army Corps for filling in the wetlands themselves.
Okay.
So, a long process.
And I did make mention to you, as well as Alderman Olson, that the people in the city of Franklin have very high standards, and we would expect this to be the nicest looking store in your whole chain. We held Target to those standards, and we would be looking for pretty much, I would be looking for pretty much the same thing. I'd also be looking for, if you're going to have what I'd call an ocean of asphalt parking lot, that everything possibly could be done to bring great landscaping in to substitute for the, boutique shops that were on the Shops of Legend Creek site. Every year when I'm recommending a budget to this Common Council, we're always looking for additional dollars for police and firemen, and we're always looking for additional commercial development. Again, this is in the Franklin School District. Number one goal has been 70-30 to achieve, this probably would help to take us on our way. So with that, those are my comments for the moment. Alderman? Alderman Wolfman?
I helped have a little light.
That Alderman Scransman?
Well, I guess at first when the mayor mentioned the 76th Street site, I thought, well, yeah, that would be perfect. But then I think about the Walgreens that's there now, and in fact, this would have a pharmacy as well, wouldn't it?
Yes, it has a pharmacy.
So I'm wondering if that, it's not a really good fit, and then the Pick and Save being as close as it is. So I'm from Michigan, so I've shopped at a lot of Myers. I like the concept. I think it's a lot better than a lot of big boxes. It's an improvement from the typical big box. I think it is probably not what people envision, but it's the economy issue. Where is that going to take us? This certainly, from what I've seen of this store, in other locations, and my experience in Michigan would definitely bring activity to that corner and probably a bigger draw. I heard a lot of comments of people wanting different things. Once that's there, there'll definitely be a lot more opportunity, I think, as an anchor-type store. I guess, I refer to the alderman of the district on most of his constituents' issues, and I've got a few of my own as far as the design. Like I said, the concept of the store is an improvement, and this should be reflected in the exterior and the layout to let people know that it is the quality on the interior by showing it more on the exterior. I think that would be really helpful and might have a lot more buy-in for the people. The pond design for me is just has uniform slopes and low edged area ratio, and to me it just doesn't look right. It's not even appealing to me. To avoid the hydraulic travesty that this area could have because of the floodplain and that, I'm wondering if you would consider infiltration and concentration with improvements at the northwest location. There might be other consultants or other ideas out there where instead of putting that triangular basin, you might be able to infiltrate and do mitigation and stuff in the current area that's up in the north where there's really not anything up there. And I'm wondering if that would be a possibility. That would certainly give you more opportunity to do things more with the parking lot. And the, what else I have on here? Maybe consider walkways, a greenway for walkways for infiltration rather than having those isolated islands, which can create the pavement heat signature, will create dead zones on a lot of those. And so to me it would make sense instead of having these little isolated pods where a tree is going to be bound inside of the roots of a parking lot to have smaller sized trees in those type little areas and make combine more of those together. I know in Middleton, the Greenway Station has a nice little canopy walkway that just adds a whole different appeal to it by just having that canopy area. The other thing would be a possibility of holding base to put the stormwater under the parking lot. I don't know if you've done anything like that, but that would allow better use of the space and less, maybe even if you did porous pavement or something. I don't know how well that works around here, but certainly you can put the underground tanks and maybe eliminate that, and then you'd have more room to push the parking lot up in that and then move the building up just a little bit, which is what Alderman Olson said he wanted to have it up just a little ways away from the residents. Let's see. I'm wondering about outdoor seating areas, if there's a deli. I know the people up at City Hall have really nowhere to go for lunch, and it would be a nice amenity for people, employees or whatever, to go down there and have a place to sit outside in a nice seating area, which would also add a nice amenity to it. I think the objective should be to go above the standards, and so you can compete and get some buy-in from Franklin and its residents. Hopefully some of them have shopped at your stores and understand that it can be a good draw if done right, but I think there are some considerations. I'll let you know if I have any more as it goes along, but that's what I have for now.
Alderman Skransky and Alderman Solomon.
Yeah, well, welcome to Milwaukee and say hello to our friend at your firm. I have some questions. Of course, the first thing, I concur with a lot of things that Alderman Olson had said, but the architecture needs a lot of enhancement, creativity, things that would be much more in suit with the landscape and with the surrounding areas. I went to your website and I pulled up some of your information, and the one building that was on it had a little different architecture with your glass enclosures, breaking up the very long areas on that building. So first concern is I think you have to do a lot of homework on the architecture of the building. Mainly three sides, the backside, I think, of course, it's important to have it there, but I think you can do a lot with shrubs, greenery, and things of that nature. And along with that, I know there's going to be a requirement from the fire department so they can get their apparatuses around the back of that building in case something tragic would happen. The other thing is on the retention pond in the front. I would agree with Alderman Wilhelm, and if you could find some way to have your surface that would be more permeable for storage of water, and if you can, if not, move that pond maybe more so to the east, something more creative. If you could split it up so it's not so massive, I think the creativity of your firm should be pretty good on doing things like that. As far as the access off of Putes Road, I know the original plan of that area from Legend Creek did have the access to that road. Because of surrounding and getting in, you do have the one on Highway 100 going in there, and of course that's something that you're going to have to work out with the DOT getting in and out, but I guess I would have the same concerns as Alderman Olson. The amount that would be dumped out there, or if that would be more of an emergency access coming in and out of there. I see you, at least you looked at the semis going and bringing them in on the north, keeping them there. That would be much more appropriate because there's really no houses around there outside of the one that Mr. Zeiger owns, which is on your north lot line, and then the post office. And as far as the walkways, I think you should really incorporate and think about the walkways. You have a lot of residents in that area that would walk to your establishment to support your business tremendously. They're a very large complex, and the people like to go out for a walk and enjoy it, and of course it would give them the opportunity to do their shopping at your business and help support you. I think you have to, of course, do a lot more as far as your landscaping on the outside, breaking up the massive area of your parking and the amenities of your trees and grass and flowers and things of that nature. And I realize this is the first shot, but that's what we're suggesting to you, to incorporate your creativity in it. Other than that, I didn't know what your layout is on the inside of the building, but I went through all the products that you have, and you have quite a bit of selection for, I think, the residents of Franklin and everybody else that would be going down Highway 36 or Highway 100 that could help support your store. So hoping that you took those suggestions with a grain of salt and can incorporate some of those in there, because I think you'd have a great project. If you're going to make this your signature of the entrance to Wisconsin, we hope your architecture and your land would go along with that. So thank you.
Alderman Solomon, Alderman Taylor, and then Alderman Olson.
I have received one call on your new project, and it was very, very positive. I've been quite a critic of the facilities or the buildings that are left in disrepair on that site right now. So anything to upgrade that mess that's out there right now would be appreciated. However, I would have to agree with Alderman Olson that the roof line needs to be broken up. I don't care if you do it with towers, with whatever. You can probably take a look at one of our new facilities on 76th and Putes, right down the street on 76th Street. We just put a new water building in there. It looks like there's three windows on that facility. They're false. Just to break up the expanse, and that's a small building, just to break it up and make it look architecturally presentative. It's really nice. That's just about complete now. But our own city has gone to the cost of upgrading that building, you know. So it's not just us talking here. We do what we have to do to make things look a little bit better. That massive roof line needs to be broken up somehow with some dormers or whatever you want to put up there, or some towers on, you know, 3-4 towers. I don't know what you want to do. I agree with Alderman Olson also on the Putes Access Road. If you look at the Franklin Crossroads trade area, there is access from the original trade area from the front of the building into Pute's, but it's only about 100 feet long before it gets to the intersection, the controlled intersection. If you want to do something like that, I would be okay with that. But to put it where you've got it, it needs to be moved a little bit more to the north. If you look at the crossroads area, it's on the north. It's on the actually the north side of the northwest side of the building. So as we move forward, if you can work with us, great. We're here to help you get it done. Just take our suggestions and run with them if you can.
Alderman Taylor and Alderman Olson.
Thank you, Your Honor. Well, welcome, first off. I wasn't born and raised in Michigan, but I did live in East Lansing for 4 years, and every week I went grocery shopping in Meijer, so I know it real well. I'm sure some people get the name wrong as we heard tonight, but that can be corrected, I suppose. I'm not going to really touch on the landscape or architecture. I think we've heard enough comments on that. You kind of know where the council stands on quality. Alderman Olson talked about deal breakers. You know, I'm sure there's certain things that would be deal breakers for you guys if we said this isn't going to be here. So as we move forward, I'd like to hear that also because, you know, this is my first proposal for this area since I've been here, since I've lived in the city. And, you know, I know we know about projects that could have been on 27th Street, the 70 Menard Medical Complex, and what we walked away from or what didn't happen here in the past. And, you know, that's not going to be where I stand. I got to look at what's in the best interest of the city. I understand Alderman Olson has his constituents that are not going to maybe like this. I mean, there's things I've had to vote for in my district where some of my constituents didn't like it, but this is what's in the best interest. The mayor's talked about tax base. I'd be curious to what that number is. I mean, I'm kind of shocked that, you know, we're this late in the game and not knowing what that cost, what that dollar amount is. Kind of disappointed, I guess, for that. But I guess you can get it to us as soon as possible, maybe in an email tomorrow, so we're prepared for tomorrow night's meeting. But I'm prepared with some changes, architecturally, landscaping, some of the things that have been brought up that are acceptable to you guys. I'll support this. Like I said, I'm not going to, you know, the economy's not what it was back in 2004, you know, and yes, we still have high standards, and we need to still stick to that to a certain extent, but, you know, we can't allow developments, good projects like this, you know, create jobs, something that the community could use in that location. At least when it comes to my vote, I'm not going to look back in 10 years at an empty location saying, nah, we should have done this. I mean, at least I know where I'm going to stand on this. So listen to the input, I think, on the architecture, the landscaping, maybe Pute's Road. But like I said, some things may be deal breakers for you, and I need to know that. And this council does also. Because last thing we want to do is shoot you down because of one item. You know, we're here, we don't want to maybe look at 24 hours. If you have to be 24 hours, you're going to be 24 hours, or else you're going to go somewhere else. Guessing that. So that's where I stand.
Okay. Alderman Olson and then Alderman Schmidt.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We're talking about the rear elevation of the building and not being too concerned about that. There is some information that most people not have, but very shortly the folks at Forest Hill Highlands will be coming with a proposal for senior apartments that will actually come darn close to the back of that building. And they're not my constituents yet, but we got to look out for them too. So let's not give them a big block at all. I understand most of this is going to be tip-up construction, which is just fine by me because the last four or five buildings I worked on at Marquette University were all tip-up buildings. I'm here to tell you, you cannot tell the difference between brickwork. But they took a lot of time to make sure that those were unique and very attractive buildings. So if you'll bear with me, I want to read for the public's information from an email that I sent to Brian on last Wednesday. And it says, we understand this will be the first entree into the Wisconsin market for the Meijer stores. I'm certain that Meijer wants to make a big impression with their new building. This one doesn't do it. Frankly, it's Plan A, and I already said this. Plan A usually doesn't get approved, notwithstanding Alderman Taylor's comments. It's not a matter of being snobbish or wanting to drive up the cost, get in the pockets of the Meijers.
it's a matter of making a sense of place for our community and a unique building for us. That's the purpose. Mitigating what my constituents have and bringing an attractive, high quality, cost effective buildings together. So thank you very much.
Alderman Schmidt.
Let me start by saying that we've been kind of a local historian here. At one point, we did have a little Dutch community in a part of Franklin, so we'd certainly welcome a Dutch revival. But I don't have a lot to add. It's been digested pretty well here. I was interested, as Alderman Taylor mentioned, the 24 hours. Is that obviously been part of your working business plan? Is that something that's always occurred in all your stores? How vital is that to your operation?
Thank you. And I've been keeping a tally of a couple of key issues I did want to have the opportunity to respond to, but this one, as long as you're asking, appreciate the chance to talk about it. And that is, in fact, a deal breaker for Meijer. Their stores are all 24 hours, and it's really the Meijer family's philosophy to be there for their customers as a convenience for the customers, to be there for whatever they may want. But as it relates to that issue generally, and again, Alderman Olson was very clear that he was concerned about that, and that's what some of the neighbors were concerned about. I've had a couple of conversations with certain neighbors who were willing to email me, call me, and talk about that, and that issue did come up, I think, in each one of those instances. But if I can characterize generally, I think the neighbors, and they'll have the opportunity, I'm sure, to articulate this themselves, and they may have a different viewpoint, but what I've heard is that as it relates to 24 hours, how will it impact them? Based on noise, based on lighting, based on things that are going to happen at our site. And we will admit to you that the 24-hour period, the early morning hours, will not be a high shopping experience. There won't be a lot of traffic coming and going. But the store is open, and with our main access point,
Highway 36.
On the north side, again, that's the signalized intersection. I want to tie a couple things together. There's been discussion on the Putes Road intersection. That's not a signal. That we don't envision as our main access point, but it's certainly for local traffic going to the east will be important. It may not be that exact location. That's what, again, we're here to listen to. We've talked to the neighbors about that. But people coming and going in the early morning hours, and frankly the trucks that will be coming and going for the 6 a.m. drop-offs and deliveries, are going to be going through this signalized intersection because it's right in, right out, left in, left out. And the truck docks, of course, are over here. So the main activities that would occur in the early morning hours are in the store primarily, where the staff is, and some shopping, some parking lot use out here, and then tucked on the north side where any deliveries would be. Typically, though, they lead up to the grocery day, they typically happen 6 a.m. to 10 a.m. I live by the Sendix on North Avenue in Wauwatosa, and I see those trucks lined up. But that's always after they open at 7 a.m. So that's what the 24 hours will really mean to the neighbors as far as lighting and setbacks. We will certainly accommodate for that, and we'll make sure we don't have spillover lighting to the neighbors. There won't be, for example, on the backside, your floodlights just beaming out to the east or to the north. We're going to be sensitive to those neighbors as well as screening, landscaping, and whatnot. So. And noise, again, as well. Those things will not be loud activities going on. There is a fair amount of land. I don't know the exact measurement as you get down here, but I know on the site plan it showed 192 feet, I think, from the shortest corner to our property line. And again, there is property right now that's vacant, and I know there will be future development, but we do have several hundred feet that separate us to the east. And obviously there's Putes Road on the south, and so that's a natural buffer to some degree, but admittedly those neighbors are right there. That's why the garden center we've designed over there. The garden center, I don't believe, is active and open at 2 a.m. while the store is open. The people who are shopping for their plants are going to do that at 10 a.m. on a Saturday to make sure they can plant them that same afternoon. So back to the issues on 24 hours. We are going to do our best to design the store so that things like noise, lighting, and use, and truck traffic don't affect the neighbors. But for us, 24 hours is a signature of the Meijer store's service and philosophy, and that's what we intend to bring to the entire Wisconsin market, Franklin included. So that, I hope, answers that question. It's not that I think we're polar opposites, and the alderman and his constituents can't have protections and adequate 24-hour operations. We're very cognizant that the Crossroads plan says no 24 hours. We're very cognizant of what that viewpoint is. But what we are proposing for this use and for how we can develop the site, we think we can be sensitive to all those issues and concerns, and that this will be the last major debate on 24 hours, and most people that thought they were concerned might actually be our shopper when they have a sick newborn at home and need that medicine or something.
I guess I would just, because we do have other items on the agenda, is that this is a concept review. It's sort of a to communicate to the developer whether they should continue if there's an interest here or not. One of the items that has not come up by the council members, and just I haven't heard it, is the 125,000 square foot ordinance and the text amendment that would be needed before anything could happen here. And I think what the concept review was put together for is just to give a, you know, is this something that the developer should pursue or not? And the last piece I think I would ask is that, I don't know who would have the answer, maybe the clerk might have it. When that was still, I think it was Illusions, wasn't it? The bar. What were the hours? Wasn't it 3 o'clock in the morning? Saturday, 3 a.m. Saturday.
2:30 is our time.
So if the bar reopened, if there was not a development here, the bar would open and the state law would take it till 3 o'clock in the morning or 2 o'clock in the morning. 2 o'clock. And the gas station that is across the street, Hodex, what is the hours for that? Anyone know that?
It closes about 9, but it could be open 24 hours.
No. But you can pay at the pump? No.
Yeah, the pumps are open.
And what about, there's a restaurant. I thought the restaurant there also.
It closes early.
I mean, just so that we, you know, it seems to me that you've had some establishments there that have been open until 3 o'clock in the morning. I did have a lot of complaints when I was chairman of the licensing committee, but not on that particular issue. I think it had to do with Hell's Angels revving their motors up and driving through across the lawns of everybody in the neighborhood. But we'll try and get to some of those answers and see if there's any objections to the some of this. Alderman Skronsky and Alderman Wilhelm and then Alderman Olson.
I went to the website and picked out all your stores in Illinois and went through them. And for the most part, everything says 24 hours, 364 days a year outside of your pharmacy. And apparently that's because you've closed it off and, or you can have a drive-up going through it. But in Niles, you do have a store that is not 24 hours. It's store hours of 6 a.m. to 11 p.m. But for most part, yes, you are correct that there are 24 hours throughout. I think with some reasonability and a lot of assurances, that might do work out pretty good because there's not many people and activity coming at 3 o'clock in the morning to go and buy their toilet paper and a new dress for the kid and stuff like that. So, and of course, it's the neighbors would have the impact. And I'm glad to see that. Of course, I would have the biggest concern, and I think along with Mr. Olson, Alderman Olson, is the delivery of the merchandise. At what time do those trucks come in? Because that would be more of an impact. So not they're coming in at 2 o'clock in the morning at 3, and backing up to those buildings and everything, and have some reasonable. Most places, I think, in Franklin, they don't come in until 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock in the morning, make their deliveries in and off, which is a reasonable time. People are going to work or up early, so noise level, let's face it, you got a diesel running or a reefer, does have some concerns, especially when you have Forest Village not far away from there and Brentwood. So, but I have no problem with lifting 125,000 square foot. I think it's a... This is a plus to the community. It's a needed asset. I just went through the financial report from our controller, and we only had 71 building permits between the residential and the commercial. We were lucky to hold our own in this very lax, bad economy, and to the credit to the mayor and the aldermen, keeping the budget in line, keeping layoffs to an absolute minimum, but yet giving the services to this community that they expect to get. I think this council here and the mayor have done a great job, but we do need economic development. We cannot stay with the status quo. So I think this is a good item. Thank you.
Alderman Alderman Olson.
Well, I guess I was going to speak to the ordinance change, and I don't have a real big objection to changing that. I haven't heard a lot from the neighbors in the area, but I wouldn't want to change that and then have this fall through and then have some less desirable. So I guess I would like the city attorney to look at what our options are, how long can we wait, how long are they comfortable with us waiting. Certainly they have some permits to get before we really need to commit to anything, because if they can't get those permits done, then we're not really looking at anything right now.
Alderman Olson.
You guys can have your deal breaker. I get mine, right? Is that how that works? The 24-hour thing, frankly, is to mitigate any potential disruption relative to noise after a reasonable hour to the neighbors that are nearby. And we all know, having been near there, there are neighbors nearby. So if you can't see your way past closing at an hour, I get that. There are other operational things that between us we can negotiate to mitigate any noise from the neighbors, and I hope you'd be open to that. But my deal breaker still stands. The Pute's Road entrance just can't be there. It's right at the end of two people's driveways, and it goes right into their living room, so it just can't be there.
Let me ask this question. Is there an objection by the council to looking at advising the 125,000 square foot ordinance if it is specific to this project and to that site or to that property? But I would ask, is there any objection? Okay. Is there an objection to the retailer, the type of company? All right, well, let me go through the list. Natural resources, special exceptions, is there an objection to moving forward if they comply with the natural resources protection components and put in the walkways and things like that? This is 192,000 square feet, right? Is there any objection to the 192,000 square feet? 24 hours? Is there an objection?
With some concern.
With accommodations, right. We have quite a few restrictions, I think, on quite a few businesses that are very definitely, I would have a great, great objection. If there was truck traffic, delivery of services beyond certain acceptable hours. I mean, we've had issue after issue. I know that this is a great business, and having met the owners, that I know that they have great pride in their business. So with that, I guess I would turn it over to you to ask us questions about what it is that you would want from us. This is just a, you don't have the value of it, which to me is like a number one issue.
Our target's 1.5 million an acre.
And two is... I think the governor just made mention of us on the Mike Goucher program above. I think we're one of the few communities that actually had a gain in jobs here. The jobs is important to me. I go over to Target. There's a lot of people, if not almost all of the people that work at Target are from Franklin, and that facility helps to augment the incomes for some of our more elderly individuals, but it also provides jobs that helps our kids go to college and pay for the college. So that's a big deal. 225 to 250 jobs that's a very good thing, especially in this economy. So
Thank you. Mr. Mayor, if I can just touch on a couple of those things. First, or in reverse order, on the jobs issue, and we did give that number, and we're very proud of 200 to 250 jobs, and Meijer stores do typically hire from within the community, but they certainly have an employment base. And yes, they're retail jobs, but in this economy, they are good jobs, and they do have benefits, health insurance being one of those benefits right off the bat. So they are good jobs. It's a well-run company. It values the family and family schedules and things of that nature. And frankly, the 24-hour operations in many ways embraces that and allows for people who may have some late-night opportunities and don't have a problem staying awake that late to work a shift at that hour. So the jobs is a very important benefit that we can provide, and that would be an instant shot in the arm, certainly in this area and for the greater metro area. On the tax base issue, and again, I apologize, we don't have that exact figure, but what I can say, and I think it's almost equally as important, it does tie into the issue of schools and how Franklin is balancing its budget and its tax revenues. We are not seeking city assistance in this request either. Meijer is proposing to construct this store to do these improvements, and it is not seeking city assistance in this project. And so when you do evaluate that, while I, again, apologize, we don't have that number, and as Alderman Taylor invited us, we probably will have that by email by tomorrow. I believe Emily, I was asking her to email our team to see if we could get that for you yet tonight. But we will provide that information for you because I think it's relevant and it's important. It shouldn't be the only reason you think of this project one way or the other, but it's something that is relevant, and it certainly is even more so relevant when it is coupled with what Meijer can provide by way of value, both improving the site, which we've certainly heard loud and clear that there's a lot of frustration. We're not the owners of the site right now, but improving the site and certainly the overall impacts of that site by way of three major roads and some road improvements that need to be done. By way of, I think, some of our questions, one of the questions that I focus on, and I appreciate Alderman Olson's candor and talking about what his constituents are valuing, what his deal breakers are, I focus on the Putes Road intersection. And I guess my question is it so much a current location as far as where we have it on, as Mr. Barron said, today's map or today's plan where it shows, or is it simply no access to Putes whatsoever? And the reason I ask it that way, and I appreciate all your feedback, and it certainly starts with Alderman Olson, it is a large site, 29 acres, and it will require certain access for emergency vehicles and, frankly, certain access for people who may live to the east and would be very frustrated driving all around and also affect other roads or create congestion to the north if they couldn't actually lead to the south. So with the caveat that our truck traffic goes to the north and not the Putes to the south, is it simply a Putes access point isn't possible, or is it just it needs to be located carefully given what's going around in the surrounding neighborhood?
Alderman Olson.
Thank you, Mr. there are several issues with Putes Road access. First one is, of course, headlights into our neighborhood. And the disruption it'll provide for them with access to their own property. It's a two-lane road. At that point, it will be a two-lane road. And it's just not a good situation for the people who've lived here and pay taxes. I'm not going to continue with that card because you've heard it all before, right? That is the primary issue. Secondary issues are, with that access on Putes Road, that encourages, this is a positive for you and a negative for the community, it encourages customers coming from the east to take Putes to the shortcut. And we'd like to discourage that. That's one of the reasons I'd like to get that off of that street. They'll still cut through, but it'll be a lot less convenient than at some point to say, I don't know. As for truck traffic on that particular entrance, we're all human beings, right? We take the path of least resistance. I'm not so sure that there's some tough turns there, but it's easier to get in there coming from the south than it is to go around the Williams Road. So is it a deal breaker for me? It's almost as much of a deal breaker for me as a 24-hour operation is for you. So we can work together on it. See if you can come up with, but that's my issues, and frankly, the immediate immediate neighbors are sitting in the back row. They can talk to you themselves and voice their opinions. Mr. Mayor, if I may, I've already talked to the applicants, and you all know how I operate. There will be a neighborhood meeting for the immediate neighbors. There will also be a larger public meeting for anyone who wants to come. That may be a part of city meeting or maybe seminar.
Well, I know it was your desire to have the neighborhood meeting before the concept review, and that was on track, and then the applicant said, well, we'd like to come in for the concept review. So.
Yes.
Alderman Skransky.
Yeah, I just so that you're familiar, Alderman Olson, Alderman Solomon, and myself are the surrounding aldermanic districts that have the heavy population around this area. So when there is probably a beginning of public hearing, you will have all three constituents in those districts at this meeting. So just so you're aware of it.
You've heard all of our comments. I hope it's been helpful. I guess I would just close by saying that the last thing I want to see happen on that site is for that current facility to reopen and to be as much of a headache as it was to the city in the past. And the other thing is, if in fact that does open, and I've had people approach me about opening that facility up, I think that the plans for Crossroads, and I think the plans for the Civic Center area, I think that you'll be waiting 50 to 100 years around here before anything like that comes close to it. So last thing I want to see is that former Illusions Bar open, and I would really, really, really like to see that area cleaned up because it is a major eyesore in the middle of our city. So, anything else that you need from us?
I think this is the feedback we were looking for this evening. We appreciate you taking the time and everyone's patience in the audience. As Alderman Olson indicated, we have already reached out to certain of the neighbors. We're certainly more than welcome to talk to anyone. They can call us, and we will have those neighborhood meetings, and we're excited about taking the next step.
Well, and thank you for allowing Franklin to be the first place that's being looked at and that you're coming forward to. Please say thank you to the owners and we welcome you to the city. If not here, we have many areas.
One other, Mr. Mayor, before I go, a point of clarification. I know it is on the Common Council agenda for tomorrow night. Does the council expect to take any particular action, or would it simply remain on the agenda and citizens could comment, or what's the procedural step given that it is on the agenda?
I don't know that any action needs to take place. I just asked all the aldermen if they had objections to all these things. I think you should be able to decipher quite a bit from that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
15 minutes.
Oh, there's a request for a 15-minute break. Is that what you're asking?
Sorry.
There's no objection. We'll come back and 8 o'clock. We're going to reconvene here. There was a 15-minute recess. It's now 8 o'clock, just before 8. Now turn to item 2, business items. Item B, concept review for revisions to the Forest View residential development, including primarily from condominium to apartment unit designation, architectural and landscaping revisions. Mr. Beadle.
The applicants are here as well, Rob Williams and Heidi Nikolai, and they'll be able to give a presentation and walk through some of the materials as well. But a brief summary, this project was Forest View Condominium Development. It's previously approved by the city but never built. Approved back in 2007. It included a number of approvals, special use, condominium plat, certified survey map, and natural resource special exception. The time limits on those have expired. They were extended once in 2009, but that expired as well, although they did finally record the CSF. But the special use, the condo plat, and the natural resource special exception have expired. So if the Common Council looked favorably on this project, they'd probably be looking for another time extension. What the applicant is asking for is the Council's opinion and input and suggestions on changing this development from a condominium development to an apartment development. They are going to leave the number of buildings the same, the number of units the same, the general location of all the buildings the same. The footprint of the buildings will be slightly smaller. The apartments will be slightly smaller. And they will be reducing the landscaping. A quick analysis by staff, possibly 200 to 300 trees, reduction in landscaping. They will be reducing the architecture of the buildings from a mixed a variety of materials, and the applicant will probably go into this in more detail, to vinyl siding, and they are reducing the articulation of the buildings as well. So that's primarily what they're looking for, is if the council would consider supporting this change from the condo development department.
And where is you and the staff of planning stand?
That is a significant change at this point in time. We don't have enough information to say for sure, but my gut feeling is if there's any concerns raised at all by the neighbors, staff would be recommending them. Right now, as it speaks, it is too close to call.
What about landscaping and you said vinyl siding? What about that?
It's a significant departure from the condo units that were developed to the east and northeast. So that's why it's primarily our concern, right, for that. It's not the buffer between this development and the existing development is very small. I mean, the site plan shows that there is an existing tree line, a partial tree line there, but doesn't do a very good job of buffering this. They would be asking the permission change the landscaping plan. They would put a lot of landscaping in that one location to the east of the buildings. And if they chose the landscaping correctly, ultimately it could be okay as a buffer. But until that landscaping grows in size and fills out, it will not serve as a very good buffer.
This is in Alderman Taylor's district?
Correct.
Okay. Alderman Taylor, did you want to say anything, or do you want to hear the...
Well, I think we probably want to hear the presentation. I did meet with a couple months ago now. We took a look at this. I guess we can, then I'll make a few comments.
If you could, please state your name and address for the record.
Rob Williams of TDI Associates. We're the architects for the applicant. You need our address, North 8 West,
yes,
22350 Johnson Drive, Waukesha, Wisconsin.
And welcome.
And Agi Nikolai, the developer, is also here tonight to answer any questions that you guys have. Looking at the project, Joel did a nice job of kind of explaining the minor changes that we're looking at doing here. It is, due to economic reasons, the condo project wasn't feasible. We've all seen it, that there's no condos being built. There's no money being funded for condominiums. So the developer is still trying to do something with this parcel, and he would like to build it as apartments now. But what he's asked us to do is basically we shrunk the buildings down slightly in square footage. The newer markets, that building is big of units as people used to buy, too. People have kind of cut back on how much space they need. So we've shrunk the size a little bit so that can be apartments, but they're designed to be a condo conversion type building. They're still... separate entrance. It's two-car garages, two bedrooms, two bathrooms. They're essentially a very similar footprint as and layout as the original condos were built, so they're designed that they can easily be converted to condos as the market comes back. He'd just like to get something started on this site. He's invested a lot of money on the infrastructure already. Looking at the buildings themselves, there is cultured stone on the buildings. Besides the vinyl siding, the original designs were brick and, I believe, vinyl siding. The majority of the stone is on what's basically the front elevation internally. All the garages are basically internal to the project itself. It's private drive, so the people that are in this development are visitors, are owners, are renters. And then the outside, the exterior of the buildings all face out. Most of the buildings are screened from mature trees that are on this site. And what we've done with the landscaping is, if we go back to the site plan, the existing condominium project to the east of the site was not screened very well on the previous project, so we've put most of the landscaping on there. There is a 6 foot, 5 to 6 foot elevation drop. There's a retaining wall that the developer already built. So the proposed buildings are 6 feet in elevation below the existing project to the east. So with landscaping is all proposed on the top of that elevation change. So even with planting 6 foot evergreens as proposed, before they grow too much, you already have basically a 12 foot difference in screen. So existing residents are not necessarily looking at a two-story building. It will be screened even at planting time. It will, obviously, as plants grow 10 years later, there'll be a very thorough buffer there. So that's why we've enhanced the landscaping in that area. We have taken off some of the other plantings that were proposed previously due to the amount of mature existing woods on the site. We just felt that it really wasn't necessary to plant 100 more deciduous trees on the site and basically get the buildings almost covered with trees. They also had a lot of trees around the existing pond. It would have made maintenance of the pond very difficult for future maintaining of the pond. Other than that, we're looking at your feedback basically on the use change to apartments. And the developer's here to answer any of your questions.
Okay. And welcome again. Alderman Taylor?
Well, I think it's pretty good. I mean, what you had originally, we know the condo market is non-existent. I mean, there are many for sale, and people can't, even one trying to, they're having to drop them just to get out of them. We look at Franklin Oaks, right across Northwestern Mutual, that they were selling those at. So the fact that the buildings are based in the same location, so there's those two condos to the east, we're going to have the same vantage point, the same view as they would have had with the if they were condos. So you're going to have the same amount of people there, the same density. And if you drive back there, it is pretty secluded. There's not a lot around it. And you have the sports complex to the north. You have all the wetland area to the west. And then you got Ryan Road to the south, and where there potentially could be a future development that waits zoned on Ryan. So here's an opportunity, I guess, to get some tax base to finish a project that has basically been delayed because of the economy. And it is higher-end apartments, too. So it's a lot different than Ryan on the Green. So I support it.
Alderman Skransky, Alderman Wilhelm.
Yeah, and your name was, again, sir, the architect?
Rob Williams with TDI Associates.
Your dad is Bob?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, how's he doing?
He's doing okay.
Good, that's good to hear. Give him my best.
For those of you who don't know, he was he had an amputation of his right leg.
Yeah,
diabetes related. He was out of the office probably over 6 months. But he's back in the office.
That's good. He's good to hear.
Yeah, that's a great guy.
Yeah. Thank you.
First of all, my concern is from the original stuff that we required to have brick around that building all the way around substantially in order to make it a good quality building and keep its architectural value. And I guess I would look at that again. Second of all, what did you reduce the size of the building from to the units?
The units now are, they range from 1,280 square feet to 1,400 square feet approximately. Originally, I believe they were more like 1,370 on the first floor to 1,600 maybe on the second floor. It's maybe 100 square feet a unit or something like that in range. It's not substantial.
But it's catching the market.
Right.
Yeah. Most cases, when the apartments are coming in, they turn them over to condos. Now, in the future, if the economy gets good, I know sure as hell you're going to be back here and say, well, we're going to go to condos on these things.
Right.
That's the market, I understand, and that's reality. So if you'd go back to condos, your condos are going to be on a real short side then, as far as side.
Well, we don't really believe so. We don't think the market's going to we think people are looking for smaller spaces, even in condominiums. We think the people got exaggerated in square footage of what they want. People are actually starting to build smaller homes, smaller, not building condos, but people realize they don't need as much space to take care of and maintain as they were 5 years ago.
Two bedrooms, two baths.
Right.
Okay, and kitchen with a kitchenette, which is a kitchenette, not a, and a dining
two
area?
Two kitchen and a dining area.
Mm-hmm. Okay, all right. Thank you.
Alderman Wilhelm?
I have a couple of things. A lot of them are probably caught in a different process as you're going through, but I thought I should bring them up. One of the things that I have the concern with is this concept of possibly going back to condos, and that brings up a lot of thoughts. Where are the individual water shutoffs going to be? Where are the garbage areas going to be? How are you going to address maintenance? You know, all of those things come up when I hear we're possibly going to switch back, and I don't see that as easily as a transition without addressing some of those type of things. So one thing, regardless if it goes to that or not, I would like to know where you, how the garbage pickup is going to be at that place. Is it going to be a central bin, or are these apartment dwellers going to be expected to bring their garbage out to the curb? And how do you?
On the site plan, we actually had two trash enclosures, one down here by building 5 and one between buildings 1 and 2. Those are the same trash enclosures that were on the plan that he had to develop. So they had those as a as like an extra trash enclosure, and I believe they still had roll-out garbage in their garage, like typical condominium developments that would be privately collected.
So you would have an outside garbage?
The city has requested that in the past, that we have like an overflow spot, so people have bigger items that they need to get rid of, that they can't fit in a typical roll-out garbage. If they can't carry out to the street like a typical resident, that we have some trash enclosures to provide for that kind of trash.
And then the, as far as, you know, are these places all going to have individual storm doors? And how is, because, again, it's going to be converted to condos.
I can answer this. It does not have to be converted into condos. I will build them the way that they will be like condos. We like to keep them ourselves. It's me and Paul Boraxis and his son that we own this project. Unfortunately, the way it was designed, there's absolutely nothing else we can do. The road is there, and it's all wetlands all the way around. So we either build the condos or the apartments, or we wait till the condo projects come back. I did not change anything, number one, because there is no room to change anything.
Well, it's putting storm doors on don't change anything in the landscape ratio of the property. So
no, I'm talking about the layout.
That was my question.
The way the way it was laying out the buildings.
I've had some issues with in my district. I've got a project that you're involved in that the entire building doesn't even have downspouts on it. So I want staff to make sure that when this is going through that those issues are addressed, because you know you're just going to have you're surrounded by water. And you need to direct that somewhere. And I don't want that to get missed this time around, because I don't want Alderman Taylor to have the same issues that I'm dealing with. So I'm bringing that up. I also would prefer to see the original outside texture, not just all vinyl, especially if it's going to be around for a while and you've got existing buildings on the other side. As far as the fire lane that's on there, is that already there?
I believe that it was traveled then.
Yeah, that was part of the development for the fire truck to be able to come out. So that must be done, and it is already cut out.
I've heard it must be done. Is it there, is my question.
They have the gravel, but I'm sure after you leave the roads and everything for so long, even everything, I got to revisit everything before I do anything. Because when you leave a site like that for 3-4 years, you know, there is something, some upkeep that needs to be done. So I'm going to put, let's say, another layer of gravel if it's some of it has been gone. But referring down to the downspouts, this is very easy project. You were referring to Indian Creek. That's totally different.
I will have that for sure. So we can move on, but I'm mostly saying these for staff and for your TDI here to understand where I'm coming from on this. So I don't know. I don't recall a special exception for the fire lane. Maybe there was one done, but obviously there needs to be one there. And but the other change that I'm trying to figure out why Building 5 looks different from the last change, and I'm looking at where the conservation easement line is, And your planting shows that there's plantings inside the easement. So unless you post that as a conservation easement, we're going to have, just like we had over at Woodlands of Franklin, where people are going to think that's their backyard, they can take over, they can put their grills out there and take that over. It looks like to me like you'll be mowing underneath as part of the lawn grass inside of that conservation easement line. This is the color drawing I'm looking at on Building 5. So that should be posted. I don't know if the... It was my understanding that as a conservation easement, you're not supposed to be planting there. I can see why you would want to, but believe that it would be a violation of the current ordinance.
I think that'd just be our mistake in coloring it, understanding that there will be no disturbance behind the conservation easement. You can easily change the color scheme to show a mowed lawn area compared to that, not an existing woodland.
You've got a really tight fit between the building and that line on the corner of Building 6 and on the back of Building 5. It's really tight. I see encroachment on that happening when that building gets built, unless there's some staff can go out there and make sure the fencing is in place before that happens. Let's see. As far as the landscape, I felt there were too many of one type of tree. I would have liked to have seen a little more variety, because if you get a disease comes in and you have all of these lindens in there, you're going to lose everything. So maybe a little bit more variety on that. I'm glad you discussed about the height back here, because I was looking at some of the plants thinking they weren't high enough to do any screening, but once you mentioned the berm, that kind of satisfied that concern for me. That was just about all the comments I had. Most of them, maybe staff can look up and work with them.
Alderman Solomon and Alderman Olson.
First off, staff, is this a private road? Okay. So
60th Street's a public street.
Pardon?
60th Street's a public street, but the rest of it.
Rest of it's there's there.
Not a road, it's just their drive parking.
Okay, that's all I needed to know. So then the garbage and everything else is there, bailiwick, not ours.
We do not pick up garbage for apartments.
Gotcha.
It would be converted to a condo, and the home is correct, and we probably should look to see that it works both ways, but initially, we do not pick up apartments.
We couldn't even get a truck in there, could we?
We'll have to look. But one thing we normally required is that we have our present garbage collector see that they can get their trucks in, and then we put in our contract that whoever the new vendor is going to be must be able to pick up everything that we're picking up now. And we'll check to be sure that this will get there.
It looks like it may be a bit problematic, but that's in there. I guess I'm looking at this 20 years down the road. And I do believe the first floor should be brick. I would hope you'd look at that. Once you get above that, I'm not too concerned about it, being non-brick. But I think long term, I think we ought to look at the first floor at a minimum be brick. And again, I don't want to see this, go downhill. In the first 5 years of operation, I want this to continue to be, a nice place to rent. That's the only concerns I have.
Okay. Alderman Olson, Alderman Wilmer.
What is the condo development's name?
Forest View.
The condos.
They started as Forest View.
Okay, so I'll just say, if I was an owner in Forest View, I'd be really mad. If you came in and named your apartments the same as my condo.
There's no
other guy, Bill.
The condos that are out there are not named Forest View.
The over existing to the east?
Yeah.
I don't know the name.
Bottom Ridge.
Bottom Ridge.
No, it doesn't matter. It's okay. As long as they're... Because I'd be really irritated because that would immediately devalue my
right.
So. Yeah. I wasn't thrilled on the original plan. I voted against it. I'm not thrilled on this plan. I'm not going to vote against it.
Alderman Wilhelm?
Well, if this should go to condos, that is going to be one heck of a maintenance expense for people to have to maintain all of that asphalt. I don't know why we keep doing that.
The vinyl side would be worse. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
I don't know. I think we should require someone to check on the plantings so we don't have what happened at some of the other places. And we should do this line of credit that covers the landscaping to make sure it gets in and some of the other issues that we might want to make sure get in and have some recourse to come back on in case they don't get done.
Yes, sir. Go ahead.
Just so you know, I don't know what Mr. Williams did here with his plan, but the trees are not that close. Maybe they made a mistake as they were, you know, throwing it here. But this road, it is very wide. It has a curb and gutter. It's in place right now. Definitely fits a truck to go through. This was designed. I'm not changing this at all. It is there. I built it. This was designed for condos. So everybody was able to see it, including the fire department and everything else. So we can easily do this turnaround. And as far as if bothers you about tearing them into condos, we don't necessarily have to do that. I just told Rob that I want to build them in a way to have individual water, individual meters, individual for gas, so more of a high-end apartment. So if I wanted to turn them into condos, I could. It was more of the fact that this is going to be probably one of the nicest places if you wanted to rent in the area. I already rent some units in the area, and I know that this will be one of the better places to be, to have two-car garage, individual entrance, very isolated. You can drive around. You cannot find a rented apartment like this in that area. Plus, with the hospitals around there, I think we're going to have nothing but people that they want to rent them. We will have no problem with that. In the Indian Creek, as you mentioned, they're getting anywhere from $900 to $1,100 per unit, and they have one car garage in that they have to take an elevator to go up. And
yeah,
it's
I didn't
only
think they were supposed to be renting those. They're kind of
not
me.
I sold all my condos.
Okay.
Most
maybe
of my
the
condos.
Renters
there is five of them, but there
are
people that they can rent their units.
Right. So that might solve a problem in my district. You can take the renters that are renting in there and move them into here. And I won't have all those complaints about renters that shouldn't be in the condo unit.
There's 10 renters in 118 units.
And still 10 that aren't
you
supposed
cannot,
to be there according to the homeowner association.
There are some people that they die and their kids rent the units. They have the right to do that.
On the concept review, did you have anything else on that?
I guess I do want to know if they're... You said individual water, they're going to have individual shutoffs, so you don't have to go in the third building down to shut the main water off of the building. You're going to have a main, each unit will have its own circuit breaker. And
correct, yeah.
All right, Alderman Taylor and Alderman Schmidt.
Thanks, Your Honor. Real quick, again, the reason I support the density is the same, you know, and it is higher ended, which means you have a different type of clientele, I should say, but I think you do need to listen to my expert neighbor, Alderman Skaronski, regarding the brick and stone. I mean, I think you've heard it from a couple of them. They always catch me if I don't mention it. But having a higher quality also, you mean having the brick, I think, or stone is essential to do, whether it's, you know, the whole thing or like Alderman Solomon said, maybe the back half, the first floor of that. So I think we do need to look at that.
Alderman Schmidt?
Regarding the dumpsters, it would seem that the garbage disposal should be at least two more. There should be at least one between 5 and 6, four and two. Otherwise, there's an awful lot of walking distance for some of those people in the other apartments on the ends.
Okay. I have a couple comments before I think the people leave the audience.
Hey, Bobs, you can't leave. No, you can't leave, Bobs, do you?
And that's that when you met with me, I had a lot of concerns about the people living above there in the other Autumn Ridge and the other condo units. Have you had neighborhood meetings with those individuals? And if if so, are we going to hear any objections from the neighbors?
We decided to first talk to you to see if we're going to proceed with this or not.
Okay.
And we will obviously be doing that with the association.
Yeah, as I expressed to you, I normally would be, I think, probably joining Alderman Olson. But these are different economic times. The council in the past has, with Claire Meadows, moved from proposed condo units to apartment units, and the rationale from the developer at that time was they weren't selling at all. And that I think what I looked at back then was that we had empty shops at Andy's and other places, and we were looking for people to fill up those shops. I think in this regard, if they're very high quality apartments with brick around the bottom, I think it's acceptable, but only if the neighbors to the east are in sync with it. And I guess I'm in favor of it because to your north, you have a sports complex with lots and lots and lots of activity with people driving up and down that drive. And so that isn't exactly the most desirable location to be. And on top of that, where you are, where you're located, it's pretty isolated. Across from there is wetlands, and then I think the next neighbor is the House of Correction. For all intents and purposes, most people aren't even going to know you have a complex there. Right? So this, again, is in the Franklin School District. I think we just had some elections around here for school board, and I think the topic was taxes. So number one thing on the agenda. So I'm fairly well sensitized to that, so that's why I would support it. I guess I'll ask I know where Alderman Olson stands, but is there, outside of Alderman Olson, is there objections to the project?
I think just the concerns of the architect.
Yeah, with the brick and all that.
And the concerns of the garbage areas and the easements and the posting and the landscaping.
So do you have any questions for the rest of us?
It's gutters, I.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Thank you. And,
thank you.
Thank you for continuing to do business in Franklin. Much appreciated.
Rob, can your dad
start that? Yes, I certainly will.
Thank you. Yeah, hope your dad's doing well. Okay, let's see. Next item on the agenda. I guess I would ask Alderman Solomon if he wouldn't mind. I'd like to move to the item I have on because I think that depending on what the answers may be from the council, we'll have a direct bearing on your item. This is one of the items I'm looking at. And this is not it's not a new item. In fact, I think I pretty well represented where I am on this. This is not new for me. I brought this up in the past that I thought that the common council duties should be beefed up, I guess, for lack of another term, in that I think over the years, there's been a lot of conflict over the appointment process. I think also that with the mayor doing it as the CEO versus elected representative from the alderman. I think also that the alderman, when I get down to looking at appointments, which depending on, no matter how you, whatever you may do, I'll just go back to the old system if that's what you want. But when you look to item G1B, it's really, it's the Environmental Commission, Finance Committee, License Committee, Parks Commission, Plan Commission, because everybody else is on 3-year terms, 2-year terms. And so some of the aldermen don't really get to serve on all of these various boards and commissions. So that's like I said, nothing new for me. I did make a recommendation. I did not share this with the city attorney regarding the adding of the common council president, be elected by the members of the council each April, and then after each
election county council president, he or she make recommendations annually instead of where commissioners have 2 years, three years, or until the end of their term. For appointment of the alderman of the city to the various boards, commissions, city where aldermen have historically served. So historically served meaning that wherever it's found in the ordinances, that's what I meant by historically served. And then the terms of office for all appointments of the aldermen to the boards and commissions would be for no longer than one calendar year. So that both the council president election and the all of the positions for aldermen would come due the following year. And in case there was any questions about the existing terms, I'm saying that all provisions of existing ordinances of the city referring to terms of office for an alderman of the city shall be changed immediately to be in harmony with this provision of the municipal code. Why am I bringing it forward? Because this is the time where the mayor puts forward the aldermanic appointments. This is the probably the one and only chance that I have to revisit the issue of council president and the appointment of the council, or the appointment of the aldermanic positions by your elected representative. So I have quite a write-up on pages 31 and 32, and I'm also making a recommendation. That's why I asked that this be moved ahead of your item all in some. And that's that we have a couple of vacancies on the Finance Committee, I think due to resignations, correct? And so before we go and move to fill those positions with both citizen members and aldermanic positions, this is the one chance to depart from that. I didn't really share this with Mr. Liberti, other than I think we had maybe have talked about it a few months back or something, that there was an idea I had. I understand there's a lot of work for the Personnel Committee. But from where we were when I was sitting as the chair of the Finance Committee, I'll just put it this way. There was not a strategic approach to collective bargaining. And you know what I mean by that. I mean, it's not next month's decision or strategy. It's over a 5 to 10 year period. And then the goals of having a benefits package that's consistent and commensurate with other municipalities around. Those things, which are, to me, are major, those things have been pretty well put in place. We had issues with software and hardware for when I was on the Finance Committee that we just couldn't, that related to personnel initiatives that we just couldn't get to, because there was, we had enough going on just with the finance of the city that the discussions regarding personnel matters had to stay for another day. They had to be delayed. And that's why I move forward and to create the Personnel Committee. But I think that with Mr. Liberta now having both personnel and finance under him, and given that, is it 80% of the city's finances come from collective bargaining agreements and fringe benefits, either increases or decreases. I think it'd be very healthy for the members of the Finance Committee or council members to be able to take all of those things into consideration instead of trying to lump it all together towards the end of the year when you're putting the annual budget together. The last piece is it has never been unusual for me to have the aldermen or the elected officials sit as the people on the Finance Committee. That's what I've always been used to. We have the Finance Committee right now is comprised of three aldermen. I think the purpose of that, even though I wasn't around when it was created, was that everything is to be pretty much hashed out at the Finance Committee, and then the recommendation comes to the council, and the Finance Committee members, aldermanic representatives, should be fighting for that budget. So the vote within the committee should be the bulk in what's being advocated when it comes to the council. Last couple of budgets, that really hasn't happened. You know, I would rather have the department heads coming in and making a presentation on their budgets to the members of the Common Council versus a citizens panel that, for all intents and purposes, their recommendations have been ignored in the last couple of years. So that's my thinking on it. It's one of these, I will work under the present system or under my recommendations, but I only get one chance to really put my recommendations forward, and that is now. So, no pride of authorship, or if you don't think these are good ideas, so be it, and I'll move on. I do think that the appointment process with aldermen happened under Fred, happened under every mayor that's ever been around here. It's brought nothing but a lot of conflict. So, having been a council president, I think it's a good thing that your elected representatives make the appointments. So that's basically it. Alderman Schmidt.
I guess one thing I was trying to understand, if those powers are transferred to the council president, as far as aldermanic appointments, does that affect then the volunteer appointments to these committees, or that continues to be in the mayor's realm?
That would be my proposal.
What?
Citizen appointments would still be under the mayor. I mean, the reason, my rationale is that you have a council member who's elected by his peers, his colleagues, that would then make the aldermanic appointments. Not the citizen. Alderman Wilhelm.
Well, from what I've experienced, and maybe you're experiencing more pressure, I've seen more problems with the appointment of the volunteer commissions than I've had of your aldermanic appointments. I personally have not been completely pleased with my appointments, but I've accepted them because that's what you've asked me to serve, and I haven't heard anybody else really say anything. But maybe someone's really taking it out on you, but I'm not aware of that. But I guess I have a little bit of a current concern where it says that the Common Council presence to monitor all appointments to see if the aldermen are doing their jobs. That's a colleague-to-colleague review, and I don't know if that's going to sit very well. It's one thing doing your job on a committee. Well, what does that mean? Does that mean if, you know, I go to the Parks Commission because there's something on that agenda for me, and I'm not at my Board of Health, I'm considered by my colleague, the council president, that I'm not doing my job? People are supposed to tell us if we're doing our job. I think that's why they vote us in. So I have a couple other comments on this, but I personally would rather see more changes with the volunteer appointments than the changes to have the Common Council president make the appointments for the automatic seats.
Well, that's why I'm bringing it to you for your input. Alderman Taylor.
Well, I have to agree with Alderman Olson. Man, wow. Alderman Wilhelm. No, I know. It's been a long day. First, I guess, on the finance personnel issue. Right now, the county we're talking about combining finance and personnel into one board, one committee. And in La Crosse, you had the finance and personnel committee, which I was on, which was only aldermen, six aldermen. I don't think there's a problem with having a finance committee and a personnel committee. What I have a problem with is the budget, because you've heard me. This is not a new comment for me to make. The last 3 years, I've commented at budget time, no input from the aldermen, from you, while you're putting the budget together. I've said, why haven't you called us up? I said, what's your concerns? What issues? That's never happened. So what happens is you do the budget. It comes to finance. It's made very clear to us it's your budget until we make one change. Then it's no longer your budget. And then we make a change, so then it's all on our shoulders. It's on the, it's either on the finance committee, it's not the finance committee's budget or the common council's budget, it's no longer your budget. And you had the last two budgets that, frankly, a couple of the finance committees had enough, and that's why you have two resignations. I mean, that's a fact. They're like, why am I going to sit here for till 1 o'clock at night or 12:30, I think it was the last one, all the work they put in, and you got the three bullets plus the tie, and it, you know, and I don't see that changing. So I think you could keep finance and personnel separate and have them do their own duties, but the budget should, you know, you do it and come here and let us decide, because eventually we're making the decision at the end anyway. I would, you know, I'd love to have Alderman Olson's input.
So you would agree with that, though?
I would agree with the budget coming here, yes. I'm not necessarily saying that we would combine both finance and personnel, but I would think that having the budget come here, otherwise, if it doesn't come here, then I would go to the second comment, is no input from the Alderman on appointments. I mean, Alderman Wilhelm talked about some citizens once she's had some concerns about. I've had some concerns about. We just voted someone down a month and a half ago. You know, tabled, right. And that's never a good thing to put a citizen through that, but it happened, and I'm sure it will happen again. And regarding my appointment to the Finance Committee, I mean, I didn't have a conversation with you. I haven't talked to you one-on-one since, I think, late March, but you didn't ask what committee, you know, if I wanted to still serve on Finance. And basically, if the budget's going to come to Finance and not the Common Council, then I don't want to be on Finance, because I'm not going to go through another budget the way it was. So I think the system that we have, you appointing the alderman, I think if you just maybe took a little input from us, I think we'd have no problem. And I think this is, you know, changing, having the council president doing it and making what I think a new vote for council president right now, which is kind of different, I guess. There's a little motives behind that maybe. But I think the way it works, you should still appoint everybody, but I would hope that you would take some input from us. Expect, you know, you, the alderman of the district, if the person that's applying for the job, you know, is from the third district, I think you should get the input of the alderman. So they have some insight. They know the person. They've worked with the person. They probably know them better than most. And I think that should happen. It hasn't. And I think for the committee assignments for the alderman, just say, hey, you want to still stay on finance? And I could have had this conversation one-on-one instead of having this conversation here.
Okay. If we stayed with the same process? I don't recall that I've ever denied somebody sending me information about their budget request. You know, would you have a problem with the alderman just sending me their request?
Well, you're spending a few months working with staff, putting it together. We don't know exactly where you're at. And I would think it would just be maybe a good idea just to say, hey, you know, or even maybe Mark, if you don't want to do it, sit down with me, or sit down with Steve, or Tim, or Kristen, or Ken, or Doug, then have Mark, he's one, you know, be putting it together with you, have him sit down and say, all right, here's where we're at, do you have any concerns? Get an input before it's released, then after the fact. Because I know you don't care for the input after the fact. I've been very clear that the budget that you put out is your budget. We make one change, it's no longer your budget. And then we get into this head-butting situation. I'd rather have these conversations before the budget's out. And I said, last three budgets, and ignore it. So if you want us to have written input, then I need to see where you're at some point. And maybe if it's not with you, with Mark. But that way I know where we're
at.
Yeah,
I have absolutely never have had any problem with any alderman sending me their budget requests. When I'm meeting with the department heads, I guess that's more on, you know, their staffing and how they're going to run the departments. But when you say aldermanic requests, I'm thinking, well, you know, I'd like to have that road done, or maybe, you know, maybe, Mr. Mayor, can you put something in your budget for a playground over there or something like that? I've never had a problem with that.
Right, we're having so much money, we kind of know, I mean, the roads program is a five-year program, and that's kind of laid out and done with through Public Works. And so I just think it's maybe the overall direction, or if you're talking about maybe potential layoffs or cuts in certain areas, maybe that would be the time just to get us some feedback. It doesn't mean that you have to agree with it. At least we have the opportunity in advance. And I don't know what your schedule is. I don't know when exactly your work on the budget, when you're going to be at a certain point to take that feedback. I'm just saying I've asked the last 3 years, or I've commented the last 3 years, that I wish there was some input from us. And I said, you know, frankly, if it's going to be the same way, then I'm not going to serve on that committee again.
Yeah, and again, you know, I don't recall ever denying any alderman.
Well, this is the first time you requested. You said that you would take requests.
But I guess from what I'm hearing so far, it sounds like just stay with the current process.
Correct. I would say maybe have the budget come to the common council and leave finance and personnel separate and keep the committee appointments separate. Just input, I guess, is what I'm saying, that it's lacking between the two bodies.
So keep the finance committee separate, personnel separate, but for the budget process, the mayor, department heads would bring the budget straight to the council.
Correct.
Okay. Alderman Olson?
Well, I'm really confused, and I thought I was a relatively bright person. I thought we were on item 2D.
We are.
Fair.
Oh, okay. So you just made a decision on the finance committee and not the
Well, it's in there. He talks about the thing in there. That's
so, okay. I got comments on both of them. Legally, what do you want me to give a comment?
Well, it is contained in 2D.
It's in there.
And the reason I asked that...
Okay, so somebody will pay my $200 open meetings. All right, I'll give you both things here. First of all, budget. The finance committee. The members of the personnel committee, by and large, do not have the experience or skill sets to act as... the functions of most of the things that the finance committee does. They don't. I would object to that, to put the two of them together. There is a purpose for the finance committee. However, over the years, the finance committee has lost... The finance committee does not have authority to change the budget in a policy substantive way. They just don't. Whether they don't want to, or they don't feel it's because they don't feel it's under their purview, or we have failed to give them the authority to change the budget. In other words, your budget comes with adding 6 firefighters. There's no way in hell the finance committee is going to recommend not hiring because they don't feel that they have the authority to change a policy of an elected official. So that's the problem with the budget. You want to bring it. If you want to remove the all-day process from the budget review, that would be great because I think that's a monumental waste of time. I don't object to having finance committee members understand each department's budget, but to put the budget, the finance committee, and the department heads through those marathon sessions, I think is absolutely absurd.
So do I.
And that's partly one of the reasons that you're losing those members. Because at the end of the day, what can they do with the information that they just got? But I'm here to tell you, we need most of this stuff done by the qualified people. Qualified, Mr. Mayor, relates to the quality of your appointments on that committee. So I would not merge the two. I would either, one, tell them that they have the authority to make budget recommendations regardless of policy recommendations, financial recommendations, authorize them to do that, or take the budget away from them.
Well, so that you would agree with me is to have the 6 aldermen get the budget from myself and from the department.
I don't know how that's going to work. But
just like we do it with
But it's an either-or situation. Keeping it the way it is doesn't work. And Tim and I have talked about that on a number of years of occasions. As it relates to your proposed changes, it's a rare thing that I don't have a strong opinion on anything. But I don't have a strong opinion on this. Do I think the common council president ought to be elected every year? Yes. Do I think that too many aldermen sit on too many of the same committees? Sorry, Ken, I voted against you last year and I voted against you this year.
So what's
35 years is too long to sit on one commission.
Sorry, I bring all that experience to that commission.
It's nothing personal.
Gentlemen, please direct
the same thing happened with all the years I sat on economic development. Same thing happens if you told me today, Steve, you're off technology. Fresh blood is good. I've been on that commission for what? 58 years. I was on it when it was the cable TV committee. You know, time changes, and you know you got to move on. Honestly, God.
I know you were.
So expiring terms, and this can happen in today's system, Mr. Mayor. You just got to quit doing the same thing over and over.
Well, that's why I was suggesting that if you were elected representative, common council president, make the alternate appointments. And that they all come.
All right, let's run a scenario. Let's say, let's pick a district. Fourth district. Some new guy runs for Albany. Been in town a year or two. Little involved in the city. Gets elected. And then wants to run for council president. Gets elected.
This happened.
Does that person have any clue what the skill set of any of the aldermen are? No. Absolutely not.
I think you're arguing my point.
So, you know, I don't have a strong opinion either way, but, you know, you got to be careful. And I'm okay with the way it is now, with the exception, Mr. Mayor, but you got to break the mold.
Well, I would... Breaking the mold is exactly what you have in front of you. It's a departure, and I'm saying that in order for the council, I think, to work more cohesively together, if the council members had their elected representative making the appointments, I think that would go a long ways versus the executive of the council making it. And the point I put in there is that I'm well aware that in many other governmental entities, the executive has no input whatsoever in the placement of members on boards and commissions.
I will respectfully disagree with you. What we have in front of us for tomorrow night, which, by the way, how did organizational business get put at the end of the night?
Good question.
I did it on purpose.
But what we have in front of us is the same as it was last year, same as it was
every year.
Always. So, you know.
I'll be bold.
So, if we leave it the same, I'm good with that. If we change and make automatic appointments and election of the council president every year, I'm good with that. I'd support that.
Well,
or if we did nothing at all.
That's why I'm bringing it here. So I have no pride in authorship. I bring it as an idea. And if you like parts of it, then go with it. Don't. I also said that I'm more than happy to stay with the current system. Alderman Taylor.
Thank you, Your Honor. Like I said, I think the way it is works. Just maybe input from the elected officials on the appointments. And Alderman Olson's absolutely correct on that scenario. That scenario was me. I mean, I wasn't here 2 years.
Really?
Yeah. And he knew it going in. He knew what he was doing. But he's absolutely correct. And then the thing is, what it gets down to is when people vote against that person, because that happens. You know, Alderman Olson voted against me last year, and then the first time was a 3-2 vote, so two people. Well, you just heard all these stories about, I went through the board chairman, you know, that decision down at the county, and what happened 4 years ago was people that voted against Holloway, they got punished. That person could do the same darn thing. And you don't want to open up that can of worms either, because that's what happened down there. 4 years, people got the worst committee assignment. Now, lucky the newest chairman, she hasn't done that. So, I think it's fine the way it is. Input, though.
My apologies, Alderman Wilhelm, you were next.
Well, the city attorney wants to make a comment, so I'll let him.
Only with regard to the suggested annual election of the common council president, the statutes provide that the council president office is filled following election.
Is it council president or is it acting, the body was elected acting mayor?
Council president. Well, acting mayor, council president.
I'm just thinking back to what the statute said. Who was next?
I was. Okay. I guess I'd like to bring up this very briefly. And you mentioned that no one has ever been denied input in the budget, but Marquette Avenue never got funded. And I did make that request. So I want to call that to your attention. Regarding...
Before you leave that, I believe that I did put in Marquette Avenue in the budget. So.
And then what I've noticed after being around City Hall for more than a dozen years, not always alderman, but
Sorry.
I've noticed that the finance committee gets a budget, and then they're expected to try to make changes to it when no one is going to budge after they've met with the mayor and the mayor set his budget. So I've been in that finance meeting trying to make suggestions, and they don't go anywhere. I mean, staff's already pretty much, sort of, so to speak, made their deal with the mayor. And I don't see any purpose in the finance committee at that point. So I would rather that the committee would meet with staff, or the alderman would have that meeting with staff, and then the committee makes the recommendation on the budget to the mayor. And the mayor can have his budget and his ideas as well, but once you sit down and meet with staff and tell them, oh, okay, I'm going to put in X amount of people, I'm going to then try to go to the, you know, they say, oh, well, you know, Wilhelm, you get to go talk to the city attorney, and you get to go talk to the judge, and now you, Alderman Wilhelm, go tell them that they can't have what the mayor already put in the budget. It's not going to happen. It hasn't happened yet. That's why we don't get any changes to the budget. So it's pointless to have the finance committee set up the way it is, unless you're going to allow them to meet with staff first and go up the negotiations, that they can send you, okay, mayor, when you go to meet with these people, these are the things that we recommended. These are the things where we see they're willing to do it. Now if you want to go in and do the final negotiation and decision on that, we have just told you where we think you should cut spending. But that doesn't happen. And the alderman could do that. We could call in, like, when the police chief and the fire chief, and they all come in, and they tell us what they would like and need, then we can discuss it. And then we, as a council, can make a recommendation to the mayor on the budget. And I'll bet we'll find some cost cutting doing it that way, not the way we're doing it now.
Okay. Alderman Olson and Alderman Taylor, anybody else, sir? I'm sorry, Alderman Solomon was my answer. Then Alderman Olson and then Alderman Taylor.
When I read my packet Friday night, I didn't expect to see item D here. I mean, it was a surprise to me. So let me I think we're talking more about item C than we are D, but let's try to keep them separate, because if you looked at item C that I brought forward with the help of Cal after having a couple, 3 hours discussions with Cal, obviously we both recognize that what's working, what we have today, is not working. Earlier this evening, Dennis Sishi was here. He's the lone representative with any financial background on the Finance Committee. The two other individuals that had the experience decided not to come back this year. One has been with on the Finance, they've both been on the, Linda and Dennis have been on the Finance Committee since I've been elected. Before that. Let me just say that the way things are structured right now with the present mayor and the present staff, you can feel very fortunate that they're here and the way they're doing things organizationally. Because the Finance Committee used to get the budget from the department heads. That's why we interviewed each one of the department heads. And we come right up, here we got a budget, and we only got so many dollars. We knew that up front. We had to make those cuts. We were here till after 1 o'clock, two or three nights in a row.
If I can, I'm the guy that moved it over to the mayor.
You know, and it was just utter chaos. It took us 4 days to get through those meetings. September was not a fun time. So as, you know, what has happened in the last couple of years, obviously, nothing from nothing is nothing. Okay? we didn't have any extra revenue to do any special projects. It just wasn't there. I mean, the economy stalled everything else. I mean, we could have made a recommendation to raise taxes 3% and put whatever in, but that was sheer stupidity in that economic times. And it's going to be that way again this year. Nothing from nothing is nothing. Even with the two projects we had on the agenda tonight. So as you move forward, I do believe that the Finance Committee budget and the Finance Committee, how should I say it, has other work to do besides the budget. You can't keep them separate. However, if I understand why you wanted to do your D first, mm-hmm. and however, I still think that the comments made on the Finance Committee, it should come right back to the Common Council after your budget, and have a meeting with staff ahead of time. With the Common Council prior to your budget being put together, maybe that's the time to sit down with you in a meeting like this and say, what about this? What about this? We're going to have to staff says we should increase the road budget by $300,000. Well, if we do that, we're going to go from $500,000 to $800,000. Where's the money coming from? It's going to have to be taken from somebody. Now, you got to remember that 80% of our budget, Cal puts together. It's signed, sealed, and delivered. It's all personnel. 80% of what we spend is on personnel. So you got 20% to fight over. That's it. You've got 100% if you want to lay everybody off. Start from zero, you know. But I don't think anybody in their right mind would do anything that drastic. When I got done reading the mayor's item D here, I looked at it and I thought to myself, you know, Tim, you'll be an alderman for over 13 years in January. And I can publicly say right now, I'm not running again. I'm done. Okay? I'll sign those papers whenever the clerk wants to put them in my coupe, whatever you want to call it, but I'm going to be hiatus out of here. I have not served on the Board of Public Works. I have not served on the Health Department. I have not served on the Planning Commission. Technology. So there's four committees that I haven't served on.
EDC.
I was on EDC. Yeah, I was on EDC for 6 years, I do believe. 5 or 6 years, right, Ted? Something like that. Yeah. I was not on the CDA, however. But for somebody that's been here this long, maybe what we ought to do is have the mayoral appoint all of these other appointments that the mayor looked at and give everybody a shot at, you know, in 3 years you'd be, you could conceivably hit just about all the commissions instead of being tied to one. Now, do you lose some expertise? No doubt about it, because I sit with Cal an awful lot on finance. I mean, so you would lose some expertise if you decide to do things like that. You would lose some expertise if you start rotating the Planning Commission more than you should. Same thing with the Board of Public Works. I've been around long enough and have been at enough of those meetings to understand what they do and what their job responsibilities are. But in the case that Steve brought up, a brand new alderman is not going to know. First time I read this, I thought, well, there's a raise for the council president of $5,000, and he's going to have to make these appointments, live with them, and then chuck up on the people. You know, that was my first thought. But it becomes maybe it's up to us to ask the mayor to move things around a little bit. But
how we vote?
It's expertise.
It's how we vote tomorrow. That's all.
It's expertise. I think you'd lose some of it. You'd get a more well-rounded background to where you'd be more knowledgeable about the departments, and that was partly why we had those department head meetings. But you got to understand how it was run, and that is just tradition that kept those department heads coming in. We didn't need to talk to some of the, like the health department all the time, because their budget was the same as it was the previous year. The clerk's budget. Nothing from nothing is nothing. I mean, she's got a couple of people, you know, as you move forward. It's good, it's bad, but I do believe, after talking to Dennis tonight, we have it good right now, and I'm glad we took the 15-minute break because I had a chance to talk to him before we left. What happens if we get another mayor that says this is a part-time job? You're right back where you were. You're right back where you were. So you got to be careful how you change it. I mean, you can change it for this group today, but think of what it's going to be next June. I have a funny feeling you're going to see a whole bunch of new faces up here next June. And what's it going to be like? So don't, you know, burn too many bridges. That's all Dennis said. Just remember that it could change back the way it was. I'm done.
Alderman Olson.
The only way that the Finance Committee would be able to accomplish the first bullet point vote in the annual budget and have them feel part and parcel of the process is to do it the way we used to. Where departments, the request from the departments was on the Finance Committee. Here it is. And then the Finance Committee made changes and gave it to the mayor and the county council. It's the only way that they'll feel part and parcel of the process. To have them do all of the work that they've been doing over the last several years is just really a demand that's bears little fruit. And I would suggest just leave it to the Finance Committee to fix that. Because they're the ones that know best. As it relates to Common Council President, prior Common Council contemplated turnover of two aldermen every year. And that was circumvented by a direct petition.
Could you say that again? Quite hear
you. Back when changed to three and three aldermen elected. Yeah. The Common Council had anticipated a 2-2-2 election cycle with the mayors being on an off year and the municipal judge the same way. That was circumvented by direct legislation whereby it became 3-3. I know that I never contemplated what would happen to the council president election. Never gave it a second thought. I figured it was every year because that's what we do. So I would support, regardless of who's the council president, I would support an annual election for that and would ask the city attorney to draft appropriate legislative ordinances.
Okay. Let me just, for the sake of seeing if I've got where everybody is. Sorry.
Before you do that,
go ahead.
My last statement was, two last statements. One is that if the Common Council is budget committee, then the budget is a foregone conclusion before you get the final vote in November. So we got to be careful with that.
That's how they do it.
Well, in all the counties, not the model. Also, I point out, if you give more responsibility to the Common Council President, you got to be careful that the Common Council President chooses to do it. No offense, Steve, but you're supposed to monitor all the boards and commissions and bring them in for review.
No, they'll sunset it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, so there we go. You know, we
haven't seen 10. 10 it was sunset.
We
we haven't seen a committee report in years. So that's it. Thank you.
Okay. City attorney did point out that in the language statutes, it does talk about a president, not just the acting mayor. That would take a charter ordinance to what deviate from what?
From a statutory provision, if statutory provision is not a matter of statewide concern, which would not have any change, and that might have to look at.
Well, that change, but that's. We would change it. If we were recommending to change to something other than a president who serves as the acting mayor, then we'd be creating a conflict with the statute. What if the annual elections are every year? Is that what you're saying?
It's all one and the same. If you were to create a new position that's named something other than town council. But the statute says, council at its first meeting subsequent to the regular election and qualification of new members shall choose from its members the president. So you have to have that election of new members. That's what the statute says. Local governments can vary from the statute under certain circumstances if not expressly provided by way of a charter ordinance. But local governments can't vary from anything they choose to vary from the statute because the court might say it's a matter of statewide concern. You can't vary from it.
Okay.
So that's the question.
So you couldn't have another election, but what the council could do is if they wanted to, and I'm not hearing that they want to, is to beef up the position and assign it duties and responsibilities. You could do that tomorrow.
Yes.
And they could also assign the council president the ability of making the appointments that are currently being made by the mayor to the alderman.
I understood the mayor's proposal to be to make recommendations to the council, and the council
in
effect.
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Alderman Taylor.
Well, I was going to say that one thing I disagree is the finance committee did try to make a policy change. The mayor's budget had the tax levy be a separate fee. Finance committee put it back onto the levy. So they did try, and I think it was a 5-1 vote. I think only Alderman Solomon voted against that. So the finance committee was there until 12:30 arguing these things for no avail, and that's why you have two resignations or two people that asked to be.
That's not,
yes.
I know. Twice I've heard this.
Well, that's fact.
And I've talked to the both individuals, so it is not a fact. Yes, it is. No, that's a campaign statement.
No, it's a fact.
Yeah, it is.
Then I will withdraw my request to the city attorney to develop the appropriate language. Well, we could, but it's not worth it.
Okay, so if I'm hearing correctly, there cannot be an election for a new council president. And it cannot be on an annual basis. However, the council could choose to assign the current common council president additional duties and responsibilities, but if I'm hearing correctly, the council would choose not to do that. Right? So the council would also choose not to beef up the duties of the council president, which are not defined. Other than what was in place, but I'm not going to argue with Alderman Taylor that it was sunsetted. I don't really remember one way or the other. So you would have a council president who, in the absence of the mayor or unavailability of the mayor, would be the acting mayor. And that's the only duty. Okay. Am I incorrect that everyone wants things just to remain pretty much the way they've been? Mayor makes the aldermanic appointments. Council can vote on them. I guess the last statement I would make is what I'm hearing is that not all the aldermen. Alderman Solomon said that you've been here 13 years and you haven't served on some of these committees. And I appreciate that. And I think that it's important that the council members do get a lot of experience. But when I think of the mayor making appointments, I'm making recommendations for appointments to help me get my job done. Not necessarily, it's not the primary function to make sure that every alderman's personal issues are taken care of. I've said that I think that the licensing committee, the current one that you have, works very effectively. We'll take up the finance committee appointments, I guess, soon. I know when I was an alderman, I wanted to be on the plan commission. I know everybody wants to be on the plan commission. Like, not you. Everybody but Olson tonight. Don't be difficult. But the plan commission is a very desirable position. I just want you to share with you the way I look at the appointments. I look at the appointments as a mechanism for people to help me get the job done and to make the city better. And then I think you try and manage the rest of it, but it's very, very difficult. And it's created a lot of conflict, and I don't think any of you would disagree that there has been a lot of conflict over these types of appointments. Understand that with the citizen appointment, that some of you may have problems with my appointments and whether they're qualified or not qualified. That's very legitimate. That's your job. You represent 5,000 people. I would appreciate, though, that maybe prior to the appointments going either on the agenda, well, not on the agenda, prior to the meeting, that I get some sort of input from the aldermen as to their objections versus having it that night at the meeting.
Well, Mr. Mayor, with all due respect, it goes the other way. Right. You should call the aldermen.
Yep.
Because if you're going to put it on the agenda, it's too late. The embarrassment's out there.
Steve, in just think of what you just said. You would want me to call all the aldermen? I don't think you would want that.
No, I didn't say that. I said the aldermen of the district the person lives in.
Oh.
I'm sorry. I was not specifically.
Well, that's a legitimate thing.
Excuse me, two phone calls.
I could do that. That's not a problem.
Two phone calls, Mr. Mayor. Okay. The alderman of the district from the applicant, the chairman of the committee that they're getting.
I don't really have a problem with either one of those, or at least making notice. Steve, I've sat here too as an alderman, and I went through several mayors. And, I don't know that I'm doing much different than what has transpired. And I'm now going on 8 years.
It's not worth talking. It is what you are doing, what you're doing.
Yeah, and the reason I'm putting this whole thing on is because this is the time and the only time that you get to discuss it and to make the changes. Because once we go to the actual aldermanic appointments, or we move to Alderman Solomon's motion, that's it for this year. So, I guess that's the whole reason for having the committee of the whole meetings is to talk things up. Alderman Wilton?
I guess I would like to see something in writing that the process about how this input from aldermen regarding all of your positions is going to take place, because short from that, it's like, well, there's nothing that says I have to do that. We'll be right back to that with the next mayor. Or something. So tomorrow night, I would like to see that be in place. That the city attorney look at where that can be inserted in, so we know where we stand. Is the mayor going to say to the clerk when we're putting together agenda, let them know? Is he going to direct, the city administrator, or what is he going to do? Is he going to make the calls himself? Can he simply just let them know that this is coming up on the agenda? I don't like to get the agenda on Friday or sometimes Saturday or maybe even Sunday. If I'm busy, I can't get back and find out the next day, there's something on the agenda that no one has told me about. It doesn't sit well. I don't think it sits well with probably most of us up here. But and I think as far as the automatic appointments, I think the mayor should look at the terms, how long. I know in a lot of boards and commissions, you can't be in a certain term more than you know, 6 years. You get to serve on that board or commission for two three-year terms, a total of six. We've got people that have sat on some of these for a long time. And, you know, I have expertise in areas. I don't think my expertise are being used to their full advantage. I don't think a lot of us that have expertise in different areas, because we're sitting in one spot the whole time. And you don't get a fresh perspective on anything. I think some of the seats that you pointed on the Plan Commission brought a great fresh perspective to reading things. And the same thing could happen if we turned over some of the boards and commissions, but they're looking pretty stale.
I don't know exactly how many appointments I've recommended to the council in 8 years, but it's a lot. I think I had Jody Vandenboom just go through the number of appointments just to the Environmental Commission, and the turnover on there was incredible.
There's a reason for that. We can talk about that.
Well, the point being is there's a larger discussion that needs to take place amongst this council. And that's qualifications. But I will tell you that there's a lot of people, and the reason that you have appointments to board for boards and commissions is to allow the average citizen to participate in their government. You know,
a person who sits in the seat for 30 years. There's other people that want to serve, but they can't because those people have been sitting there for so long.
Well, and a part of what you're saying, Alderman, has to do with some of the positions have 3-year terms. Once you're appointed for an aldermanic position, or some of the other boards and commissions, they have three year terms attached. In fact, yeah, it's part of the package. Well, okay. I think I've heard plenty. That's good. Well, that's all.
Maybe the way to solve the council president election would be to get back to two aldermen being elected every year. Which fits the state statutes.
You got to talk to Art Singer on that.
Well, I understand that, but he changed it before, but why can't it be changed again? I mean, I think we're talking about the same thing here.
Yeah, I think what I'm hearing is that everything's fine. Just keep everything the way it is. Maybe the council wants to move the budget process to the council, annual budget process. But everything else is fine. Keep the finance committee separate from the personnel committee. So the mayor should continue to make appointments to both finance committee and personnel. So I can get off of that. So I can move on that. Because I do have people. In fact, I have a little stack of people. Very qualified. Okay. Council president, no elections until after the next election by state law. Council has the ability of changing the council president's duties and responsibilities if they so choose. Let's see, what am I missing?
Volunteers, terms of double long-term terms and obviously.
Oh, and then that what the council is saying is that for some of the aldermanic positions, they would prefer that there be a rotation or something for those that are available that are not 3-year terms, like library and board of public works. Maybe the plan commission. Maybe there should be, okay. But you do have it on the agenda. I have my appointments in front of you. If you elect not to go with 4 votes for those, and I think maybe 4 for each one.
Maybe 4 votes for each one?
Yeah.
For the ones tomorrow?
And I'm
going to
make 2 phone calls.
But I think it's mandated that I must bring in the aldermanic appointments.
Oh, I agree with you.
I think the 30th or something.
Right.
So you have them in front of you. If you elect to go with others, then I guess I would ask the city attorney to, right, so you have the appointments that have lapsed or that did not get approved. Now, does that fulfill the statutes, or do I have to come back with another appointment the following council meeting? Because the way I'm reading this is the appointments have to take place tomorrow.
I think there's a void in, frankly, a void in the law. You can get into situations where, whether it's a village president or a mayor, makes appointments timely, those are rejected by the governing body. There is no time requirement, as such as the next meeting where the chief executive brings back another appointment. So get into this hiatus period that there's no real clear answer on. And you'd have a vacancy in the position, is what the bottom line is.
And is that permissible?
Well, it's frankly unavoidable in the real world because the chief executive officer has done his or her task by making an appointment.
That's
why the governing body has rejected that appointment. So there's no written obligation anywhere that a mayor or a village president or town chair has to have backup appointments in case board or council doesn't confirm.
So it could remain vacant.
Good.
Somebody croaks up here that's going to
Can a mayor?
That's possible.
Yeah. Can a mayor bring in potential appointments for aldermanic positions and then allow the members of the common council to select who they would want?
The understanding is ultimately the mayor's appointment would be after receiving input from the common council. Improper delegation of.
Well, the reason I ask that is because if it requires four votes and the negative quorum consists of what, two aldermen?
No, it's four votes, well, majority of all the members. All the members, and you only count the mayor when the mayor votes. So it's four out of six, the majority of all the members if the mayor doesn't vote. If 3-3 tie, 4-3 vote, then the mayor is coming. So.
But, I mean, in essence, I could come back the following month because I wouldn't be prohibited from talking to all the aldermen up here under law. And so you put another name for it, and there's another possibility of another vacancy, isn't there?
Correct. And there is an open meeting, so I know there's been some comments about talking to council members, but there's an open meetings law up there also.
Right. Alderman Wilhelm?
Mayor, I want you to know that I'm not interested in sitting on the finance committee. So that appointment's on for tomorrow night. That would make my fifth committee because I didn't realize that the minutes say that I'm appointed to some other committee.
Well, I think it's got to be an up or down because it's already on the council agenda. But
if you think about what the city attorney just said, we could go 6 months.
Three months.
With it. Well,
that's exactly why you have this in front of you.
Yeah, we could go 6 months without any alderman being at any committee.
That's right.
So, but absolutely right.
But if tomorrow,
can we get it through April?
Yeah, right. So if tomorrow, if there's a 3-3 tie on a position, the mayor breaks a tie, that's four votes, though. Right, so you just need a 3-3 tie.
Yeah, if he breaks the tie.
Well, yeah, if he breaks the tie.
Yep.
Okay, then. Anything further on this? You going to create trouble?
Go ahead.
So I've been around here for 2 years. This has been a very enlightening discussion since I haven't been privy to all everyone's history on the different various committees and stuff. As far as terms on the different committees, the one thing that we had in our historical bylaws that you can serve on the board for a maximum of two consecutive terms. Consecutive three-year terms, after which you would have to step aside, but you could always come back after a three-year period and apply and get back on that board again. The one thing I was trying to understand as far as the election of the council president that said that you cannot change it unless there's a new council. I mean, like, if one of us had not been reelected, would it be a constitute a new council, and then you could have an election for a council president if one of the aldermen had changed on this year?
City attorney.
It contemplates the regular election statute.
So, but if...
In other words, if there was a vacancy, I think your question is, somebody leaves office and the common council decides instead of appointing to fill the position to hold a special election, there's a special election in September, does that mean that the common council, the term of common council president expires after that, and so in October there would be a new council election ballot? No.
If someone had been elected in this past April election to change the composition, then they would have grounds for electing the president.
It's not grounds, that's
the statute.
Rule.
Okay.
But that also means if the same people are elected, that's considered a new council. So you were saying if a new alderman gets elected because somebody doesn't run, even if everybody were to run, and everybody were to get reelected, that's considered a new council.
Okay, who else had it? Anybody else? Council president stays the same. No election. No additional duties. Council president, what, serves as acting mayor in the absence or inability of the mayor to be able to do his job, right?
Oh, wait a minute.
Who evaluates that?
Yeah.
Well, I was just thinking about the appointment process.
I can say that. See, I got seniority.
Yeah, that's good. I like that one.
You know, I'm so low.
That's a good. That's good. That was a good job.
Okay. Try and rotate.
Shuffle the chairs.
Rotate and shuffle. Well, two phone calls. Or I'd say notices, written notices. Maybe getting something.
Move to adjourn.
No, we got to go back to three.
Yeah. I think it's solved it though.
What happened? Yeah, what happened with the final?
Take up three then.
We're just going to leave
it. Do we have anything else?
Withdrawn.
You want me to go through this again?
No.
Keep finance and personnel committee. Make no changes. Mayor should start to move forward with more appointments. Council president, no election until new elections. No additional duties to be added to council president's position. Serves in whatever the statute says about that. Try and rotate and shuffle aldermanic appointments. Two phone calls or written notification to aldermen of the district regarding suggested mayoral appointments.
And the chair.
Chair of the committee.
And the chair of the committee. Yeah, because otherwise, why would I call you twice? That makes no sense.
Calling you again.
Well, then, forget it. Okay, so is that, yes,
anything else? There was one other.
Yes.
And the Finance Committee can come back if they have a suggested change to the way the budget's done to do it better. At least that was my suggestion earlier, whether to get it.
I think you're, do we ignore that?
We can.
Yeah, okay. All right, next item
is
Alderman Solomon.
You forgot putting Marquette in the budget.
I did put Marquette in the budget.
Well, after that wonderful discussion.
Good.
Well, gotta have them, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, it was fine. I had no problem with it. What you see on the memorandum from Cal is the asterisk, and the asterisk shows what is already reviewed by the Common Council on these six bullet points. So a lot of it are recommendations from the Finance Committee to the Common Council, and the Common Council obviously has to approve those. Again, there are two very, very qualified people that have decided not to return. I've looked at the appointments, applications for appointments to the Finance Committee, and I don't want to go there. But it's going to take a lot of work to fill those two positions, let's put it that way. When you're looking at people that are in the accounting world and in the financial world, it's going to take yeoman's work to get those people to volunteer.
Well, Solomon, I just would say that just everyone needs to realize that we did change the appointment process, that they can only stay, the incumbents can only stay there for 60 days.
Correct.
We also advertised to get the number of appointments that are in.
I understand.
Okay, sorry.
I'm just saying this may be an opportune time to move the process forward to the combined Finance Committee and Personnel Committee. Looking at the work, I went through this whole thing. I would think that most of this could be done by a combined committee and or the personnel committee. Some of this stuff needs to be done by the Common Council, as you can see, all the asterisks that are there. So some of it could come right to the council. I'd like to talk to Mark, since he's the guru that's going to have to be involved with this starting tomorrow. You're in charge. What's your feelings?
Regarding which specific topic? Finance Committee?
Finance Committee, yes.
Although I see you, one important thing that there hasn't been a lot of discussion on is the fact that Personnel Committee is really going to be changing a little bit from where it was, given Act 10. You know, it previously focused and had some more to do with labor contracts, most of which are going away. And so the Personnel Committee is going to get a little more involved in and continue to have to focus on some human resources topics. And so I think one of the comments that came up earlier, that the people who were on finance and the people who are on human resources, those are different backgrounds. So it really comes down to what the Common Council is looking for as far as citizen representation on those groups. What's the purpose of it? Like, for example, on the Technology Commission, those members are serving a different role than they do on some committees. Instead of staff bringing things to them and the commission saying, does that make sense? We do that, but we also get a lot of information from the Technology Commission members. You know, they're not just acting as a sounding board, they're actually acting as a resource, free consultants. And they recognize that, and they recognize that's what we're using for. So you sort of have to think about what are you looking for the role of those people on finance to be for me to answer how I think using them. Because it's really the community's identity and the community's perception of public input. I've worked in organizations where we had no citizen boards, and that works fine. I've worked and been familiar with others that have a preponderance of citizen boards with no aldermen or elected representatives on any of them. And that works fine. So it's really a community personality, how you decide you want to have citizens involved at that stage. You know, in a representative form of government, that's what you're elected for, so some could argue you don't need them at all. Others say for you to do your jobs, you need lots of them. So I will be able to work under whatever structure that you leave. I think your big question goes back to the one you started with. It wasn't on the mayor's last list. What do you do with your budget? Are you going to run that through a finance committee, or are you just going to bring it right to the Common Council?
I'll be truthful. I think...
You mean you're not?
He's looking up.
I'll be very truthful. I don't think the finance committee the last 3-4 years feels real good about itself in that budget. I do believe that we should look at the budget schedule, and I think that's the criteria, and come up with a different way of handling the budget, looking at that budget schedule. In other words, in May, we make our budget requests to be included into the mayor's proposed budget. In June, we get the forecast. In July, sometime July, towards the end of August, we get the mayor's proposed budget, and it comes to the council, not to the finance committee. That's just the way I feel that the budget should be structured. Staff will probably have to work on that, using the budget timeline, as that whole sheet of paper shows. As we get into September, it gets pretty...
So I translate. Are you saying that the department head should just come straight to the finance committee right off the bat?
No, I think the department heads should come to a committee of the whole in June for the budget forecast, and they say, here's our issues this next year. Okay? I need 5 squad cars. Why do you need 5? How about 3? I need, I have 3 elections this year. The city clerk's going to need extra dollars in her budget to take care of those elections. You know, so as you move forward with the forecast from staff, that should be coming to the Common Council and to the mayor at the same time, so we can have input. I don't think the finance committee should be messing with the budget at all.
Right.
That's just the way I feel.
The council.
The council should do it. The council should do the budget.
We can set that up. We can figure out the timeline.
Yeah, staff will have to work on that. Put forth the timeline, and the budget goes to the Common Council.
Yeah.
But it's got to be you got to be involved from the start.
Exactly.
That's why I'm saying the forecast is done in June, and that's when you run the department heads if they have special requests over and above their last year's personnel.
Should you then have aldermen on the finance committee, or should they be in reserve?
Well, that's a very good question. You wouldn't need them on the finance committee, then. All 3 of them.
Maybe just 2. Like you have 2 on personnel?
You have 3
on personnel. Oh, yeah.
Or none?
No.
That's a good question.
Look at carving the finance committee down from what how many members you have.
Right now, 5.
5 citizen members.
There's 5 there right now with the 3 aldermen. Yeah, Dennis and Mike.
Oh, yeah, but I mean all the vacancies.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I appreciate some input from everybody else. The other 2 that have served on the finance committee for the last 4 years.
Alderman.
I think Alderman Olson was first, yeah.
Well, you know, I served on the finance committee for probably 6-8 years, so I get it. Your solution is okay with me bringing the budget to the council, because, well, I gave all that speech before. relative to the citizen members and the applications you receive, it's the identical conversation that we've had in my speeches about EDC. If you want a specific quality person, you go get them. I'll make some phone calls tomorrow. But you can't take what comes across the transom on a very technical committee, and that's what that one is. There's two of those, three of those. EDC, CDA, finance, and technology. Everything else can be done by a generalist.
EDC?
I said that. That's what I said. So I'm good with the chambers. Let's just say they don't do the budget. They can do budget review. They can do budget changes, but the preparation of the budget, let's go out and get some members for it.
Well, I would say that having three aldermanic members on finance is still necessary. I mean, you have three on personnel. Why 80% of what we do is personnel? You got finance. We're making decisions. You should have some elected accountability on there, I would think. And having, you know, three members, you get a little bit of cross-section, different experiences in that. I mean, we are elected to represent almost 6,000 people. And I think, you know, you're still making financial decisions that still come to the common council, but we put more time in it, and it comes here. Now, obviously, we the other three look at it. I mean, Alderman Olson, Skransky, and Schmidt, they look at the packet, and they vote. But we're getting a lot more information from Cal and whoever presents to us, and we have someone come from the outside than those other three members are. So I think you still need to have three and three. I'll still serve on finance, considering this budget thing. Otherwise, I would have said no, just like Alderman Wilhelm.
You're up.
Well, okay, I'll work with staff, and we'll come up with timelines for council meetings, and then stuff will have to, might have to have an extra meeting or so.
Sure.
As we move forward into the month of September.
So what would be your recommended motion?
I'll work with staff and come back with a timeline for a budget process where it comes to the Common Council and not to the Finance Committee.
But I should still move forward with recommendations of citizen members to the Finance Committee.
If they're qualified.
In whose opinion?
Call the chair. We have to call
the
talk to the chair.
That's the whole purpose.
And the alderman of the district.
They've got some financial background besides a checkbook.
Friends used to call me all the time.
I think I think that the council needs to take up, when you all talk about qualifications, you really need to put that in writing. What is it that all six of you agree are qualifications? And just like you would have qualifications for an employee. Because that's what I hear. But I would also remind you that you're doing that. There's 35,000 people in the city. By placing those types of qualifications, you are also restricting the number of people and citizens that can participate in the government. So, you know, a person that has lived in Franklin for 50 years, perhaps he or she has ran a farm for that whole period. Maybe they don't have accounting skills, but should they be allowed to participate and have a say government? I would say yes. But that's something that this body needs to pick up once and for all.
We've been through that. I sat on those committees with people who wanted to serve but didn't understand what was going on around them. It doesn't help anybody. It doesn't help the citizen who's serving because they sit there and are bewildered. Doesn't help the citizens. That, you know,
writing down qualifications, I understand being from a personnel background, your desire there, but a simple conversation between the chairman and the mayor will let you know whether it's the right person or not. It's not a, it's, this is not rocket science. I'll make some calls tomorrow.
I think it's a... I think when you start talking about qualifications, you're going to hear from your power constituents.
Second.
The move and second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? I say motion carries.